G'day, everybody. It's the Monday, number 31. Today we're here with Professor Bob Dobbs and Scott Taylor, who is one of McLuhan's last students. The date is Thursday, the 10th of November, and it's 2011. So as we're meeting here on the dim high series of speech, I think it's pretty important to try and establish who this voice is we're talking with. And so Scott Taylor was the last serious student of Marshall McLuhan. He also probably wrote the last tetrad that made any sense to anybody. And the first question I'd like to ask you is, what time is it? See, McLuhan in the 50s, he had this interesting project that was, he asked, what time is it in the poets? And I see you as a bit of a poet, so I was wondering, what time do you think it's now, and what time have you seen in the people that you're paying attention to?
Well, I don't really know how to answer that. It's not something I've generally thought about, especially since I think all vibrations, all rhythms, all resonations are to a large degree not working as well for the human community as perhaps language rhythms and resonations, for example, used to do in the past. So I have a bit of a hobby horse and a bit of a hobby in that I'm trying to track what I tend to think of as the culture of the black hole, or black hole, white hole culture. And this is the culture that I see that the general society, which I tend to think of as a society of social autists or autistic individuals, and I would see that the best way that that is currently being personified would be in terms of social media. I see the internet, which many people, including Zizek, have described as a black hole, as being kind of a black hole circumstance or situation. And so we get social media speaking to, into and out of that black hole state. So I'm constantly trying to keep up to date with all of the new physics and the discoveries about black holes, and also thinking about it in terms of its more populist turn. A year ago, last July, I gave a keynote address speech at an international conference, the Digital Art Weeks conference in Xi'an, China, and my keynote address was about the unreal imagination of Maitreya, or the Buddha to come, and its relationship to art science, or what I tend to think of as art science. And the unreal imagination is quite simply just the fact that everything that man is capable of perceiving or conceiving or knowing about the nature of the universe, even its hardcore physics, is illusory. And when pushed to cultural and individual psychological extremes, becomes a delusory kind of pathology. And so I see a lot of, I really see people beginning to move a long time ago into social autism. It's really what comes from the development of empirical science and the fact that Francis Bacon tried to remove all metaphoric and analogical thought out of consideration when it came to detailing any scientific mm-hmm. program. And we also find at that same time, or quick after Bacon there in the 17th century, we get the first people suggesting that there was the possibility of black holes. And then by the time we go through positivism and mechanical materialism and the revolutions in chemistry and the Industrial Revolution, we end up with, the Einsteinian formulations that in fact black holes exist. So while our language comprehension or all our old illusory sense that we know who we are and where we are, where we're going, where we're coming from in terms of our language phenomenology, I mean, to even say the idea of word being made flesh and flesh being made word, we're losing our full capacitation to be able to articulate what's going on. And so I see this all as a general digression into the black hole.
Okay.
Am I making any sense?
Yeah, and it follows naturally into the other thing I was going to ask you. So first was just when, how are we? The next one would be where. So presumably the where we're in relation to this black hole. So what is the location of your voice or the you-ness in relation to this black hole? Where are we?
Gosh, that's quite a phenomenological question that you're asking. I have a very strange kind of eccentric idea about where my voice comes from. It is a little bit related to that idea that our entire environment or our entire context, in any way we want to think about it, is all part of how we express ourselves. It's part of our full intentionality, and that the more that we encompass the environment around us, external and our internal environment, the more then we are able to more correctly or righteously articulate our voice. So I would say that there's this idea that's been put forth about the so-called cosmic commode, which is related to the idea that at the center of galaxies, of stars, of human beings, of each atom, of every thing that we see as constituting the makeup of the world, we find a black hole, or a place that everything tends to fall into and fall out of in terms of the opposite reversal of black hole, or a white hole. And so I think that in a way our experience and the experience of our own vocalizations is coming in and out of that kind of rhythmic involvement. Am I making any sense?
Yep. And I read all of McLuhan's diaries, and I was always got a chuckle at the regularity that he reported that he was impacted upon by the full moon. And so is a part of you or your you-ness impacted by the full moon that we're experiencing at the moment?
It always is. I'm always really, really surprised to find out when I become sensible, conscious, in other words, with a minor part of my mentality, my conscious mentality, that in fact that moon is there. I'm a Cancer. I was born July 3rd, 1950, and on the same day as that famous Scientologist, the actor, and also of the fellow Kafka who wrote Metamorphosis, and Leibniz. I don't know if that had anything to do with the phases of the moon, but it probably did. I've always been referred to and always kind of oriented myself a bit in terms of the moon. But it's true, you feel more full. You feel more like singing or howling when there is a full moon, no matter where you are, relative to it.
Yeah, McLuhan was a Cancer too, as I understand. So, so how do you relate this? So there's one part of you that's impacted upon by this, or at least we understand this moon that is supposedly orbiting the Earth, yet supposedly culturally or societally we're, you know, in this orbit or in the within the black hole. There's a dissonance there.
Yeah, I think we have to keep remembering that it is an artificial black hole, and it's an artificial white hole. I really think that the internet is a very bad metaphor, even when I use it or Zizek or anybody uses it, for an actual physical artifact, or if you can even call it that. I don't know. I've always been photophobic, in other words, that I shy away from the sun and sunlight, and in some ways that's disturbed me, and in other ways it's what led to a lot of the introspection that I've been involved in. Another thing, as a Kabbalistic tarot card reader, there is the higher arcana card for the moon. And it is a card that is devoted to everybody's own path, their own rocky path, when they move into any kind of personhood or any kind of real salience or sagacity. The usual card depicts, at least on the Rider-Waite deck, a crayfish coming out of a pool of water onto a path which goes between a domesticated dog and a wild dog, like a coyote or a wolf. And then the path goes on past two twin towers and then follows up in a kind of almost spiraling curve to the top of a mountain in the far distance. So classically, or if you think of the archetypes of unconscious as being classical, the Jungian kind of classicism, the water is always symbolic of the spiritual. And when we get on our path, or when we move in a focused, attentive way, a collected way forward, we discover that we are a very odd creature, a crayfish or a crab of some kind. And then we move on the path. The two dogs, the domesticated dog and the wild dog, if we stay with them, then we are actually working in a narcissistic kind of shallow framework, because you're domesticated or wild only in terms of some kind of relativity. So they're relative terms. And then the two towers are just the causal polarities or bipolarities that are involved when you're in any kind of thinking process. But if you continue on the path, then you go higher and higher up the mountain, and we won't get into all of the signs and symbols of the mountain. But there's another card in the tarot deck, which is the higher arcana card for the hermit. And the hermit is standing on top of the mountain. And that's when somebody has achieved a position of autonomy and authority and authenticity. And that is the goal of the path that is described in the moon card that everybody has to go through. And the hermit, as in a hermitage, is in a place of grace, is in a place of sanctuary. It's when you move into the position of being something of a great soul. But we also see there that he is a depiction of the cynic and of the stoic. It is a depiction of the philosopher who thought that he could not think with mankind or with general culture, that he could only do his thought with Godhead energies. And that when we move into that prayerful state of reverie, when we're meditating on ultimate but not absolute forms or changeable aspects of the universe, then we truly are in that state of grace, and we're able to move out of our own contempt for ourselves and for any human context.
If I can just interrupt, set it in relation to what you've just expounded in relation to McLuhan. So McLuhan is understood by a lot of people as a conservative Catholic, but he spent a lot of time in the Gnostic, Hermetic, alchemical texts, and you've clearly developed your thinking about media, about the present, by really going into a depth that possibly McLuhan didn't in that respect. Can you talk about that difference or what you've done since, after leaving, McLuhan, or after his death, and why you've pushed in this direction? Did that make sense?
I wouldn't necessarily agree with you that I was going beyond compete with McLuhan, and I couldn't have been McLuhan. I can't be McLuhan-esque, and that's okay with me, and that was certainly okay with him. So I'm not sure. I want to second guess him or anything like that.
No, I was more interested in the difference insofar as you spent a lot of time with McLuhan. He clearly impacted on your thinking, but it's what you've done after which becomes really interesting, and or at least to me, insofar as what did McLuhan's last and you're one of the most interesting thinkers to come out of his school, if you will. And so I'm just trying to get a handle on the hows and whys you've pushed your thought further in the direction of the Hermetic, the alchemical, the Gnostic. What's going on there?
I think it's just to try to come to terms with my own pity and terror, and to try and deal with some kind of cathartic way through. I've always thought it was interesting that Euripides says knowledge is not wisdom, and then T.S. Eliot takes him up. He says, where is the wisdom we've lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we've lost in information? And so on and so forth. McLuhan was the one who pointed that comparison out. And he then usually would talk about the last person who knew everything was supposedly John Stuart Mill. And John Stuart Mill, of course, is where we see the whole idea of utilitarianism and the meeting of utilitarian forms of thinking with technological forms of thinking. And so I've always seen that as both a dissolving of what could be construed as the ancient forms of wisdom or traditional forms of wisdom, once you've got rid of all of the superstitious aspects related to it, and the beginning of the movement into utilitarian notions of binary codes and digital forms of being and awareness. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I tend to work quite often with just a real simple model of an hourglass of vortexes and of spirals going down and then flipping at the center and then moving, and then a whole long line of those, that kind of wave causality. And so I think that it's true. My mother used to say, she used to say that if you really want to know anything about anything, that in the end, if you study it hard enough, you'll end up knowing everything there is to know about everything else. My mom was a teacher's teacher, and she was constantly, would harangue and question her children for more and more substance and more concrete detail about their experience and its relationship to their thought formation. It was my mother who first studied McLuhan at the University of Alberta and brought his books home for me to read when I was, you know, 14, 15 years old. And so her interest in that. Anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent. You know, I mean, you know, the universe in a grain of sand is always the way that I try to approach everything. And I recognize that the universe in a grain of sand is a kind of Zen koan. And as a Zen koan or paradoxical situation, it also forms, you know, a kind of an engine or a way to understand deeper kinds of truth. Now I'm beginning to feel like I am overreaching myself. I think
this is brilliant, Scott. Hey, so as you've communicated so far, it's been a lot about your personal and private understanding. But like I've understood you also as a critic, you've taken some interesting steps to communicate with other minds, to allow other minds to share in what you've been doing, you know, through your anti-blog, this, that, and the other. What are you trying to do in relation to others, in relation to an audience?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, it's really funny. You know, when I do my readings of people, my empathetic readings for people, they say, well, you know, this is really gifted. How can you do that? When did you first know that you could do that? Well, my problem was that I thought everybody did it. I thought everybody was empathetic all of the time, everywhere, and I just could not figure out. I was really confused and bewildered by the way that people treated one another, treated the world, and treated me. I've always thought that the way that people treat general external nature is the same way they tend to treat each other, and it's really gone on my nerves. So I think what I'm trying to do in a non-soppy way is really get across that when you're empathetic, you move into a state that allows you to resonate with the rest of the universe around you. And that anybody can do it, and the main thing they need to do is simply trust that they can. I don't know. I don't have any trouble with paradoxes. Paradoxes and ironies, to me, are the universal hooks. They're what guide us through what's going on around us. You know, the greater the contradiction, the deeper the truth. And the deepest contradiction or truth that we seem to find ourselves trying to grapple with is the deep difference between life and death. Well, I just found it fascinating a couple of days ago when they suddenly announced the scientific community that they had discovered that a lot of what they had considered as organic compounds were readily being made in a lot of places, or could be speculated to be made everywhere in the universe. And so the idea of life having to be terrestrial is really maybe a kind of ignorance. And then, of course, we would ask somebody like Ian to come in and have a conversation with us about that sort of thing. But that's kind of how
he will, Scott. He will, or they will. Andrew, did you have something? I want to mention something in reference to what Scott's already said.
Yeah, sure. I've only really got two other questions, and then that should but take it away, Bob.
Okay, we'll see what this inspires. You mentioned Francis Bacon. You know how Marshall said that he had both feet, one foot in the Renaissance and one foot in the Middle Ages. And then you're saying Francis Bacon created these blinders. Isn't it? It's the fact that Bacon showed up at the time of the printing press, and the printing press distorted the more integral vision that Bacon had, and McLuhan says, and mimes Bacon's vision. That was altered by the printing press environment, which Bacon didn't know would happen to him. Is that the reason Bacon is aligned with the empirical reductionist science?
I think Bacon was a really confused man who was trying to deal with political exigencies in his his own culture. I think he is there right at a real pivotal point. That's certainly brought in by the printing press. And I think that he was trying to contain in the way that politicians tend to. What he could intuit was going to happen, because we know that we move immediately with the printing press into terrible 17th century wars of words and pamphlets. And all of the carrying on that ends up with Charles losing his head and all the rest of that. And, you know, I really, really admire Bacon. In a way, I kind of identify with him. But in other ways, I think he's kind of a shady character. That he was probably homicidal, a murderer, and a number of other dubious things. And I think the murder was probably politically exigent as well.
Okay, so Marshall's celebration, or at least Eric McLuhan makes a lot out of Bacon.
Yes, it's Eric. It's not McLuhan. You see, McLuhan moves to other people rather than really pigeonholing Bacon. I think that Bacon was as fascinating for McLuhan in some ways as he was for me, because he really is that kind of, I think Bacon came into the culture in some of the same ways that McLuhan comes into our culture.
Yeah.
And so he could identify in that way.
And McLuhan had the advantage of hoping not to make the mistakes that Bacon did.
Exactly. That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And now here's the point, though. He did not succeed, as we witnessed the events of the McLuhan Centenary.
I don't think that that's McLuhan's fault.
No.
I think we can all, all take credit. I mean, as a general culture. Look, people are still thinking of culture in traditional ways, when in fact we do not have a culture anymore. That's one of the things I really agreed with Ian before, when he was talking about how there are no children, there are no adults, there's
right.
All of those kinds of things.
And that's Coker's understanding, too.
In a different way.
From Ian, yes.
I see more as an amiable nihilist.
Yeah, he's this guy, he's a nihilist, but he's got a cover. He's got a chair, and he's a university professor. That's his cover.
Yeah, what I want to do, though, instead of just being a nihilist myself or an anarchist of some kind, is I want to really put something there which wasn't there before. In other words, rather than, it goes into that awful dialectical idea of the negation of negation. And so then I get just as disjointed as Mao over it.
Okay, so McLuhan had the advantage of seeing why he would be misunderstood. And he talks about this in his autobiographical books, Medium as a Massage, War and Peace, Cliched Archetype, Through the Vantage Point. You could see those, that new phase after understanding media. He's writing about his own image as an archetype or potentially in trying to show that he's aware of the disservice that will come of it. But, okay, so he knew that he'd probably lose. And that may be the root of his faith as an antidote to that. But is there a successful level that you think you can accomplish that he didn't do?
I've never tried to. In my life, what I've always found myself doing is trying to deal with the last time that the culture smacked me down. You know, I mean, I'm somebody that is in has felt myself to be intellectually, in other ways, constantly in a state of affect.
AF.
By it, yes.
Yeah, AFFECT.
Yeah, and so it's just like, you know, it's you know, a little bit that idea, oh, what a blow that phantom gave me. So I'm thinking of it as being the unrealistic understandings, the illusions and delusions of people around that are sometimes able to take the wind out of somebody who is really trying to point out that the emperor isn't wearing any clothes.
You're saying that's you?
Yeah, to a certain degree, you know, but I wouldn't start weeping and wailing around about it either. You know, sure, you know, I think we can all feel sorry for ourselves. And I think McLuhan was able to get rid of a lot of that too. But look what he had to take, one title shot after another.
Yeah, and did you follow any of the McLuhan Centenary articles? Did you look at any of the coverage or any of the activities?
You know what? I haven't. I stay away from it. It makes me wince.
Yeah.
Whenever I've dealt with any of that, it is such a supposed appropriation and misappropriation and twisting. You know, like I feel really sorry for the kind of migraine headache that it would cause poor old dear McLuhan in the first place. And you could always see it, because you could always see when his, and I hate to do this to Eric, I don't want to pillory him, but every time Eric would say something, and you know he wasn't getting it, he would say it to his dad would have that that inner kind of
wince.
Of wince, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. And so, okay, what was he, what do you think Wilfred Watson would make of this? Would he say, see, Marshall, I told you, he had no clue.
Well, I think Marshall and Wilfred, we might ask Guyan about this, but I think they're great friends up in heaven or whatever you want to say there, because it's become more and more clear that Wilfred knew a whole lot more about what he was trying to talk about, but wasn't able, maybe any better than I've been able to either, to really talk about how we adopt this new technological cyborg body of forms, which then comes back down on us. You know, I mean, a lot of these new technologies, one way you can think of them as extensions, and another way you can think of them as tangents that are out of control and come back and cut your head off.
Well, that's Croker's take, and Marshall included that. That's Croker's strategy or tactic, that he pretended McLuhan didn't do that.
That McLuhan didn't do that?
He says McLuhan was on the extending or, quote, optimistic, unquote, thing and didn't recognize the cannibalistic medium, and that's exactly what McLuhan was warning. So we know to object to Croker's definition of McLuhan, but Croker does a good job in showing how it falls, extending McLuhan's disservices aspect of the android meme coming back and eating everybody.
McLuhan got pretty dogmatic about that myself, and I was always kind of surprised. And I think sometimes McLuhan didn't see how far some of the thinkers were around him. And so there were some places that McLuhan couldn't go and didn't go. And I'm sure he had his reasons for it or whatever. I wouldn't second guess him on it. But sometimes people were trying to get things to him that were ineffable or that were tacit or that the culture to date still hasn't been able to work out how to articulate.
That's what people are trying to get to McLuhan.
Yeah.
But if it, to the degree that they were getting a message to McLuhan, McLuhan knew what they didn't know, that their message isn't going to get out the way they intend. At least he knew that.
Well, you know, that's what I kind of enjoyed about talking with Ion, because Ion does that same thing. It's a kind of freedom. It's, you know...
What is the same thing that Ion does?
Ion frees a structure up.
Yeah.
He does manage to try to get you to get beyond whatever model you're struggling in at the moment.
And so you're saying there are these people who McLuhan couldn't accept because he required them to understand the limitations of the model world they were living in first before he would hear their content.
I think that's a really good way to express it. But he knew that in my situation with him, he knew that I was always taking that into consideration whenever I tried to say anything.
Yeah.
And so when we were in the situation with my in my orals with the other adjudicators, you know, he got across to me that he was trying to help me out. He was trying to send me a rope and get me off the plank that I was walking on.
Yeah.
That he could see that the models that they wanted me to cough up were ones that I was really, really adjudicating and trying to make sense of. These were 18th century models, you know.
Mm.
Berkeleyan and, you know, those kinds of things. Bishop Berkeley and people like Lockean. I mean, in a way, those are more foreign to me than McLuhan.
Yeah.
And I'm more along the line of a Poincaré or somebody like that.
Poincaré, Poincaré, the French mathematician. And we should point out that you have mentioned Zizek, Slavoj Zizek, that's Zizek or Zizek.
Yeah.
Do you, before we go back to Andrew's last questions, what is it, why do you keep talking about Zizek or Zizek? Why do you mention him?
Well, you know, he's the most controversial philosopher at the moment, cultural philosopher that's being discussed.
But where is that? Who recognized him? Has he spoken at Oxford? Has he gone to Cambridge? Has he spoken at Yale?
Oh, yeah. He's been everywhere. He's been all over the place. Just Google him.
Right. No, I've seen that. So he's the new Derrida. Derrida had that role for a while, right?
Yeah. He's more, what's the word, digestible than Derrida. I think Derrida, and I don't like to use this word, but I kind of think he's kind of precious. You know, like he got, you know what I mean?
The aesthete, too much the aesthete.
Yeah, and I think sometimes a little bit too pointed.
Pointy-headed.
So, you know, he ends up standing on his toe. his
Okay, so I saw a recent YouTube of Zizek on maybe Slavic TV or something, and, you know, it's not even as good as Baudrillard, but do you think that there's a left network that must have their McLuhan kind of guy, their image guy? Is this why there's an audience for Zizek?
I think nobody knows anymore whether they're left, right, or what they are. They don't. They really have dropped. They know what their social loyalties are, and you know they think they know who's buttering their bread financially. But you know it's gone. Nobody really knows. Just look at the markets. And so we're in we have the post-intelligentsia that's post-intelligent and post-intellectual.
Okay.
Works.
What? Last word?
None of it works. Zizek does the work. I wish I could get up like him and prod out all of those conundrums.
You think you'd do a better job than Zizek?
I don't know if I would. I wouldn't do it. You know, it would be beneath my contempt. I see him as somebody who has fallen into this, social autistic stardom. You know, there's a little girl in one article who said that when she grew up that she wanted to be a shopping mall, and the shopping mall would be all about her. So all stores would, and you know, she's 4 years old when she was saying it, and that's what where Zizek is. Zizek is that little girl.
Okay, when you've been talking about social autism as an effect of virtual reality and the virtual digital technology for 15 or 20 years, do you understand that that's what happened, at least in the public level, between the banks in 2008? The social autism that they were living in became figure, and they couldn't talk to anybody or trust anybody. Do you realize that financially your phrase, social autism, is the cause, indicates the cause of where we got financially now?
Yeah, but what I think it's about is whenever you try to make the abstract concrete. There is no such thing as the abstract. There's no such thing as the concrete.
Yeah.
Both of those concepts are gone. And so they were still believing that you could do whatever you wanted to do without any kind of, this is a stupid word too, but regulation.
Mm.
And in other words, you could use supercomputer models for any kind of financial scheme or schism that you wanted to, and that it would work for you. I think that it's profoundly spiritually and mystically deviant forms of behavior to believe that and to do that. It is thoughtless.
Well, do you think McLuhan was the first to see and act on what you just said and understand that?
Well, I don't know if it's the first one. I think there's quite a few intelligent people.
Oh, okay. In public, who else could you name in culture?
You're right. You know, like he really would set himself up. You know, see if you can hit me and drop me into the drunk tank.
But so, I mean, did Wilfred see it at that point? Well, no abstract, no concrete.
Oh yeah. Wilfred really could see it. So could Sheila. So there were people around like that. And they were really, Sheila particularly was really worried about it.
Mm.
It worried her. She was kind of Canada's version of Anna Akhmatova.
Who's that, Anna Akhmatova?
Oh, she's an absolutely fabulous Russian Stalinist poetess. She was a mistress of Modigliani and model for him.
Oh, okay, right. She's a friend of Mayakovsky?
Yeah, Mayakovsky and Mandelstam and Bach and, you know,
okay.
All of those.
All right, so Andrew, can we bring in your final questions?
Yeah. Scott, I've got two questions, but they essentially can be compressed into one. I'm interested because you're, as an empath, as a student of McLuhan, would you characterize a project today that extends the trajectory of what McLuhan was trying to achieve? How would you recognize his project updated for today?
Well, first of all, you've got to realize that almost everybody now is very sardonically and sarcastically, Wilfred Watson pointed out, was going to become a mini Marshall McLuhan. And so everybody now, to a certain degree, continues to throw their flypaper and specs at McLuhan, when in fact they themselves have taken on the role of being mini Marshall McLuhans. Every technological hardware and software designer and all of the kids who are now busy working with their iPods and all the rest. Whatever they were involved in doing as they process their sensibilities is what McLuhan was pointing out was going to happen. But they are losing more and more creative distance, objective distance. And it's odd to say this because it sounds contradictory, but they're losing their fringe awareness. They're losing their ability to contextualize the very operations that they're involved in. They don't understand that the radioactive bomb is not the atom bomb or the hydrogen bomb or clean bombs or dirty bombs. It is the radioactivity or the action at a distance that they are involved with when they're using all of their handheld machines. So what we're seeing is, you know, like Sheila and Wilfrey used to say to me, Scott, you know, you are trying to warn people against getting into what you are trying to get out of. And I think I can say the same, and they could say the same about McLuhan, is that there needs to be a kind of major distanciation in any moral or ethical or any kind of Gnostic or mystical kind of appreciation and any real aesthetic and intellectual appreciation of what's happening around you. You have to be really, really careful.
Yeah, Scott, I like you pointing out Minnie McLuhan's. I sent that over to the media ecology list. I said, the media ecology impulse, or with the perception of being that, is all over the planet, generally seen as technophobia. But I agree that the stance of McLuhan is now a cliche response in all ages today.
That's right. That's right.
So specifically, the question
is, with a big, big difference. Do you want to talk about that, Andrew?
No, it's more in light of that then. It's what are the characteristics of...
a new anti-environment. What would be the anti-environment to the situation, to the obsolescence of McLuhan?
Yeah.
Now, you were going to say, Scott, you can address that, and you were going to say the big difference.
When McLuhan first came out, people literally didn't get him. They didn't have the mindset that was capable of understanding what he was trying to get across. And, you know, I mean, you know, I'm just staggered that the man was able to get across as much as he was.
Yeah.
Nevertheless. But now everybody has internalized all of those. They've internalized not only McLuhan, but the television sets and the computers and everything else that's going on. So the fear isn't so much anymore even about technology. When we talk about technophobia, we're talking about something which in the old psychologizing way is a rationalization of what you're doing. It's the fear of what the human being is capable of doing, unleashing within and outside of him or herself.
Now, you started to say a couple minutes ago, the big difference. What was going to be the big difference between what, or did you just answer that?
Well, I just answered it.
In other
words, you know, now nobody thinks anything that McLuhan said is of any interest for a totally different reason than when they attacked him when he first came out.
Yeah, that's why, like, Don Thiel would say, forget McLuhan, back to Finnegan's Wake. Now, if you really get McLuhan, you have to perceive the irrelevance of Finnegan's Wake. That's why he said, we've got to go back to that. That was Thiel's answer.
Finnegan's Wake is the last great repository. It's a cenotaph. It is it is not the prison house of language. It is the charnel house that the body of language played in. And, of course, he's got it. It's Finnegan's Wake, you know.
Yeah.
On hoping that we all keep on hoping that language is going to move rapidly forward. The problem is that we're losing our language ability, not only to the degree that we move into English, which is the most redundant and has the least frequencies, action of frequencies in its resonation of any of the global languages, but into the so-called digital. And, you know, it's not even dust into dust anymore. It's into the opposite of reification. Reification is when you take the abstract and you make it concrete. What we're doing is we're taking the concrete and we're making it abstract. and thinking that this is a wise and wonderful way towards Trump-like wealth.
Yeah, in his Media Approach to Inflation article in 74, that abstract, his term for was the tactile interval becoming figure. See, it's not a visual abstraction. It is tactility itself is abstracted, or it is the abstraction.
Yeah.
So that the average citizen can go, whatever, you see? They don't try to left hemisphere rationalize anymore. They're in the corpus callosum. It's normal to be in the interval, to recognize the both-and situation. But they don't know how they got there, and they don't know how to have an end environment to it.
Yeah.
Andrew, your final point, or you can say...
I still don't reckon you've answered that question, actually. Like, I really appreciate your diagnosis, but I'm just pointing at this is you've suggested that McLuhan would be anti-McLuhan today in that sort of sense. Well, how would we recognize how...
He was anti-McLuhan in his own day in
yeah.
a really fun way.
Yeah.
When he had that joke, you know, which was always, you know, a picture of him pointing at his son or at anybody else and saying, I'm one of you or you're one of me.
Yeah.
That's it. But McLuhan was anything but a suicide. You know, like he was a real Viking. He wasn't going to go down with the ship. He was going to pull the ship up out of the maelstrom.
Yeah, he used to say that joke, message to deep sea diver, surface immediately, ship is sinking. So
yeah.
Marshall would be the deep sea diver surfacing?
Yeah. Well, he did tend to identify with that, yes. But we see a whole long concert of connections there, you know, that was discussed in that book I might have mentioned before, Hamlet's Mill.
Yes.
Where, you know, Loki and the shitster, the trickster god, and Hamlet and McLuhan. He's a Hamlin-like figure. I find that it ridiculous that they even think at all vaguely that that Bacon could have written Shakespeare. Can you imagine Bacon writing the character of Hamlet in any of the ways that I've been discussing here? No, you either get that or you don't get it. And what's really going on there, I think, is a really deep instinctual understanding that everything goes on, that there really is no such thing as death, and that's the great secret of life. And so McLuhan was working as best he could to motivate his sense of archetypal drive.
Did you know the story Barry Nevitt tells? The story he once asked Marshall, what would you say or do, Marshall, if when you died and you woke up realizing there was no death? And he said Marshall's answer was, plunge ahead.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that sounds precisely right. Yeah, plunge ahead.
So, Andrew, are you looking for a singularity in the black hole culture and wondering if Scott could take on that role?
No, there's a few sort of pragmatic concerns about writing and communicating a critical project, a satiric project, a scientific project today to try and continue the trajectory of that work. How would it look in actual physical expressions? That's of interest to me, but I guess that's what we're working out.
Hey, Andrew, I will boldly say that what I do with ION, and we're going to witness it right now, we're going to address these scientific issues, ION is the anti-environment we're looking for. Not in any personal salvation. He'll undermine those models. But for the articulation on multi-levels, since ION knows every bit of data that we can know, he's an anti-environment to the Google, to the Internet.
Yeah, I'm working to a plan here, Bob, and that's what I was setting up as the question that needs to be queried, is putting that on the table and to interrogate that. And so I was...
Yeah, good. You want to interrogate it before ION comes on, you mean?
No. I mean, I think... when people listen to the session, they will hear it as logically progressing towards that point. But so, final question, Scott, and just to go in a totally different direction. How much of McLuhan's work do you reckon was simply a reflection or a meditation on the Virgin Mary or the Mediatrix?
Everything that he talked about the educational process, is his attempt to articulate what channeled through him. I'm of course speculating this and projecting it, but I think that would be the case. He would see the advancement of learning as being more involved with that kind of thing. So what we would think of there would be the supposed idea of universal negative charge and how it then teaches or creates a positive charge. There's this idea that there really aren't different charges, positive, negative, and neutral, because the more negative energy that's there, the more it tends to move a little bit. It gets a little bit of action through it, and that action is the positive charge. And so I'm seeing that as a kind of metaphor or analogy to the educative or educative process. So when you meditate or you move into gamma kinds of ways of thinking, you create more and more and more negative charge, which then allows you to move forward in a more knowing way.
And you're saying the Virgin Mary is a catalyst for acquiring, emitting the negative charge?
Yes, I think
it's... For McLuhan it was.
I don't know if he put it in those terms or anything at all. But I think that doing that kind of thing, having that kind of involvement, was for him really delightful, and he wanted to get that across. I think that's why he, you know, kind of teased, tickled, provoked me about those kinds of subjects whenever. We could talk about it. And usually that was whenever we were alone.
Right. Scott, you don't realize how appropriate it is the words you've just said the last couple of minutes fits to the introduction to Ion. Now, recently I asked Ion, are you electricity? And Ion said, yes, we would accept that definition. So here we have the extension of electricity in all these toasters and computers. And Ion is not for meditation per se. He calls it mediating. So you've exactly laid out what Andrew hopes we'd lay out, and he did good stuff to do it. Now it's perfect to begin with this point. Captain Beefheart did that great song in 67, Electricity, on his first album. It's very interesting, and we've been talking a lot about the charge thing and the neutrinos with Ion lately. And also, as usual, the J.J. Abrams that makes Fringe, he's always picking up exactly on what we discuss privately with Ian, Carolyn and I, on the week, like last week, if you look at the latest Fringe, it's exactly what we were discussing with Ion and working on, but the electricity theme is not really in the latest Fringe, some other points, but this your metaphor, the negative charge, is exactly what Ion loves to talk to, but Ion does a lot on the black hole, so I'd like to introduce Ion, and I do it this way. Ion wants everything that he says taped and copywritten. So I'll say from this point on, this part of Mum is copyright November 10th, 2011, copyright 2011 for New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved. And we're ready to have Ion. If Ion's lurking, could you voice yourself, Ion, and begin to exchange with us?
Yeah, at this point, Bob, I'll ditch out. I'm going to go surfing. Thank you very much, Scott. I've thoroughly enjoyed
Oh, I'm sorry to hear you're going, Andrew. I really love and enjoy it. So you come to Canada and see us.
Yeah, that would be great. I'm due to catch up with Michael Edmund. So thank you all. Thank you, Bob. And
thank you, Andrew. And we'll talk soon, later tonight or something, on Skype.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, so Hopefully, Scott, Ian can be evoked. Greetings, Zion.
Hey.
Good. Now, you've heard what we've been saying, right? What Scott's been talking about, the black hole?
We don't hear.
What do you do?
We know.
Okay. Is there some commentary? I'm saying, was Andrew looking for a singularity in the black hole culture? That's Astro. Now, here's an interesting phenomenon, Scott. JW's dog, Astro, always goes to sleep when JW goes into the altered state or condition and Ion performs. And Ion says that all animals, dogs, are non-physical. So it's interesting that the dog conks out for as long as JW is in the altered state, and then as soon as JW comes back, the dog wakes up. So Ion is an extension of non-physical. It says it now can play in the ship landscape, and it affects. We see the immediate effect for a traditional non-physical. A dog cannot take it, must go unconscious. Now, just this past week, Astro started waking up during the sessions and speaking, and we just heard it, right? Ion, that was Astro in the background, right?
It is.
Okay, so Scott, address the black hole culture situation, or Ion, you respond to what you've heard Scott say about the social autism that's become rampant.
No, you don't begin there.
Okay.
Just get out
you
of
begin.
The way.
You begin. You pick where you want
no,
to begin.
No, get out of the way. This is just... Scott, let's go into the white hole, black hole conundrum.
Say yes, Scott.
Yeah.
Or not, and this doesn't make any difference to us.
Yeah.
Well, you make a statement or two about your concepts or images of that, Scott, so that Ian could respond.
Well,
let's take the edge off. Hold on. Scott, we are deliciously delighted, pleased beyond reproach, to have confab conversation interaction with you. All right?
Thank
it's
you
very,
very much.
Predicated here that we don't speak to just everyone anymore. Okay? So, to lay a little preface here, it's a delightful, wonderful experience that you're engaging, and we are thoroughly pleased to be able to have conversation with you regarding any construct that you would like to lay out. However, there are many points that you're making that we agree with. There are equally as many number of points that we would not even go to edge with, but would enjoy further developing. So this is your window of engagement or interaction to allow you the ability and capacity, or maybe is it capacitation, may just be old-timey intercourse, we don't know, but we can't tell the difference, to lay out some of those periphery that give you an insight based on what you're developing as this maybe inconsequential knowing that you're trying to prescribe. And we hope it'll help. So develop it a bit, carry on a bit, and we're with you.
Okay, well, thank you so much. The delight is mutual, and I've been looking forward with bated breath ever since our last conversation, and I'm truly very happy and grateful to be able to talk to you again. I don't want to sound like I'm kowtowing too much because I don't want to fall over backwards, but I do want you to know
we'll
that
keep
I appreciate
you. We'll keep you propped up. You're all right. And nobody hurt.
Thank
You're
you.
Fine.
Okay. First of all, the idea about singularities is to me.
All right. Singularity. Now, see here, we told you to turn loose, and now we cut you off right at the knees. Okay. Singularity is the place or the premise or the position within the event horizon in what you prescribe as a black hole. Singularity is what you arrive from, not arrive to.
Right.
And so we boldly can say, if indeed the medium is the message, the singularity is the eye hole that many have been extruding to.
Yeah, I understand, and that's what I was going to try to articulate.
Good, and that's right, that's right, that's right. And because of your obvious gifts, see, that becomes very simple. It's simpatico. It's simpatico of your place of knowing. And deliciously so. You've even got even the beast riled up now.
Oh, I love beasts.
Well, they love you too, so it's all good, right?
Well, you know what Garbo said when she watched Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast. When the beast turned into the handsome prince, she said, "Oh, give me back my beast." give me back my beast. And I agreed with her.
Right, and Mae West said, "Is that a roll of quarters in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?" No limitation. It's all great fun.
Yeah. So we have, let's say, just a plenitude, a plenum of singularities, and then how do we juggle them? How do we balance them? How do we work them in such a way that we can engage and involve other people?
You're adding the construct of time, and that'll end in tears. Chunk all that crap in a,
right.
Chunk all that
you're
crap
right.
in a bucket
so
and start over.
Here's
what you do. You don't nullify the limitation, because that makes it more of a limitation. You embrace the is that is now, which is what Marshall was quite the defeatist in trying to accomplish. And it's back to the Finneganese state of knowing. That Finneganese state of knowing is that is no more than a very, very, very specific playfer cipher. That's all. So you're trying to engage the construct of making Finnegan's wake awake when indeed it's not asleep or awake. That'll solve your black hole, light hole, white hole, dark hole, hole hole.
Yeah.
That would say butthole or hole butt.
It's a finisher. It's like
that's right. That's right. That's right. So it becomes euphoric. It becomes very, very prolifically euphoric in about 2.3 seconds, because then guess what? Marshall gets to be right. Marshall gets to be right. And that's the one thing Marshall never wanted to be, was right.
Right.
He also didn't want to be left, as in the Playboy interview, or the construct within the global village, obviously. He played it both ends to the middle, or as you would say correctly, burned the candle at both ends. Very fine, very appropriately, right?
Yeah.
To arrive. Marshall was always trying to get somewhere. So are you. So are you. So now let's develop it from that place. There's been much intercoursing going on so far, but very few have been pregnated yet. We want some pregnancy.
Okay.
So develop it, and we'll help.
I'm getting that, and I'll develop it while I'm so-called sleeping.
Very marvelous, very marvelous. And all the beasts of the world agree. So good day.
Yeah, that works too. I guess, all right. So how do we cope with that natural aspect of our spirit? In the end, isn't that kind of what everybody's trying to falsely, in some ways, pattern out?
Well, see, baby, you're still trying to save the 99. The good shepherd, as Marshall would quote in the Good Mass, was that the shepherd forfeited the 99 for the one. We, like Marshall, get that we're only about the one percenters. Okay. We're not interested in a 90 and 9. So it becomes quite a fool's errand, which you've already found to be real in your reality. And that's all right. Ain't no trouble. Ain't nobody hurt. It's fine. It's just a little shift. It's just a little shift. If you focus your world on the one percenters, then the whole wide world bows, and they get your crap you're trying to say. As long as you try to vindicate, validate, or vicissitate the 90 and 9, it'll end in tears, baby. It'll end in tears.
Yeah.
It has no choice.
Yeah.
It'll make you go surfing when the best thing that may be happening ever in your world so far is ensuing.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I should ask you. I think that I can kind of divine.
Well, you're an empath, so if you're any good at all, just tear it up, baby. We're with you.
You know perfectly well that you were in me and a part of me a few minutes ago, and I've managed now. I'm trying to contain you in my heart chakra.
Yeah, that heart chakra gets snot in it sometimes. That third eye chakra will screw you up sometimes. No, it's easier. It's funner than that. Ask any crazy thing you want. We'll take it from there. If we're half as good as we present ourselves as, we'll keep up with you, big boy. It's all right.
Yeah, but I'm really not used to conversing with somebody that has your...
It's not a body. It's non-physical.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well,
and see, that's the point. No, wait now. Hold on. There's no paradoxical reference or inference to you in your place of power. That's the problem. There is no paradoxical inference between you coming into your place of power. We can say it again if it's necessary. Once you come into your place of power, you willy-nilly excavate all the others that are in the confines of the conversation regarding your confab. The point of this mum is to bring Marshall McLuhan either bring his happy butt back or bury his happy butt eternally and be done with this mess. Because is he is or is he ain't is the position.
Well,
and
I
if he is,
don't want to bury him because in a way he brought me to you and you to me.
Well, not so much, but it's okay. At the end of the day, it's a good day because, see, you get the vibration of this. That's what few others do. See, we call it, Bob calls it frequency. Well, we do too. Not frequency, frequency.
I'm feeling that.
Yes. See, if you get the freak on, the freak is the part that obfuscates the norm. Well, the norm, there is no norm, you see?
No.
The new norm is there's no norm.
Right.
We can take language, the metaphorical or impetus of language, and convert it into, OMG, Scott, what's the BFD? And you know precisely what we mean. Ah, so now...
That's scary to know.
Good. Scared, be afraid. Be very afraid. Tell everybody, run. Run. It'll be over soon. Don't worry about it. But that doesn't apply to you. Because as you embrace that, what you're trying to do as a good empath, that's kind of an oxymoron, you know, after a little while.
But as a good
oxymoron, the one on the right that's trying not to be the one left, you see, the one that's up trying not to be down. Yes, indeed, that's exactly how it plays out. They get it, okay? Now, whether they do or whether they don't has no capitulation regarding your position. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, and that's sad, too.
That helps. See, well, it soothes that savage beast that you're trying to confiscate. Is that confiscate or obfuscate? Interesting, isn't it?
I tend to think of the human being as being sometimes it's a bit of a cliche to say this, but the beast of the beast, the beast master, the deep, but the heart of the beast.
Well, you're talking about the cliche archetype, and that's the problem. There is no archetype within a cliche. It either is cliche or it's not. And if you come into your place of power, the archetype then becomes the standard by which all others are judged. Well, now you're only separating the 99 from the 1. Now, we're not beating you up. We're not beating you up because your construct is good. Your construct is good. We're talking about moving now into this white hole or a-hole or black hole or butthole or whatever you're talking about. We get that. But let's go into the singularity and the event horizon, the distance between the two. What can survive within it and what's the outcome of it? That's your point, isn't it?
Well, one of the, I still tend to move into theoretical discourses.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
do
it's
that.
A big mistake. But I still get stimulated
what a rabbit can do to a stump. Stimulation is that easy. Aboard, about, above, across, after, against, along, amid, among, we can go on. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
But see, it's that preposition, the prepositional positioning. See, until you have an object to the preposition, it's an adverbial clause. See, and if you start moving into the pluperfect tense of the isness that is in the future are-ness, all of a sudden, this menial English language becomes prolifically avant-garde powerful. It's the distance between c'est la guerre and c'est la vie.
The future pull the rabbit out of the hat you out of the pot.
Well, but if there's no future, you already know the rabbit's in the hat, so then your world becomes anew.
Yeah,
well, isn't that what they're talking about? That's what all the sages that you can quote, including T.S. Eliot with the hollow men headpieces without straw. That's what Eliot was trying to lay out within the confines of James Joyce's ridiculous position of the wake without the cipher, however angelic. Good. They're from the realms of glory. Once you come into that and you start plugging that into what the centrifugal positioning that you're laying out. See, now here's what's fun, Scott. We ain't beating you up, baby. We're with you. We're just we're giving you a little extra twist. So all these we're trying to be easy. This is mum. Hold on just a second. Let's Bob.
No, it's not mom anymore. Don't worry about that.
You get in here and you get in here and soften this up, or it's going to go south. That's what you need to know. You jump in here, have some confab, have some conversation, sort out what's been discussed so far, and lay this up. So Scott's doing great. He's doing fabulous.
Well, I'm just wondering about the degree to which language obfuscates what's going on, and to what degree that the
language obfuscates absolutely. The problem with the wall, Winston Churchill laid this out. He built walls all of his life. He retired from a simple, what do you call those post office workers? They are
courier.
Well, no, they're not a courier. They are
government clerks.
Civil servants.
Yeah.
And became prime minister to help his pension. That was his only reason. He spent his entire world building walls.
And he started, Ion says, we'll stand by, he started World War II.
Well, of course, because it was good for business.
Yeah.
And that's all right. See, y'all see war and famine and all the plagues as a problem. We see it as a place to bring you into your place of power. If it wasn't for those GD plagues, the Jews would have never been released from Pharaoh's bond that the Hebrew people asked to be imprisoned regarding.
Right. Now, Scott, I would intervene here by saying that Ion emailed me during the first hour when you and Andrew were talking and was very pent up, said, Bob, stop this, let us in. But I said, no, Andrew has to have his interview with Scott. So we're witnessing, this is Ion spewing from the pent up of the first hour. I think Ion's going to, once he comes, gets a bit of it out, then he'll hear what you're saying, Scott.
We already hear. But,
well, you know,
damn.
But what about the recording? Okay, Ion, I got this point. You're drowning out what Scott's saying for the recording, and the listeners would like to hear what Scott's saying. So please back off a bit and let him finish his sentences, okay? Maybe not. Okay, get it in quick, Scott. Get in while he's...
Well, no.
Here we go again.
Just hold on.
You do have to wait
Scott,
it out, Scott.
Scott. You've got too much in this process so far.
Yeah, I don't know
how
I can.
We're
going to
finish the sentence. We're going to finish the sentence whether you like it or not, baby. We love you. Just hold on. This process that you're engaging, we're going to take it apart piece by piece by piece. Honey, we're one of the few things on your realm that can still conjugate. Okay? That's all right. We're with you. We'll get it down to the nth degree. We'll take it to Pico and beyond. Many humans don't even know what Pico is. You do. But it becomes such a pushed-up place regarding non-physical when you start qualifying or validating or vindicating this very place of power that the humans already had. You know this. You're trying to help the little ones, and we say, stop it. It's not doing them any good. It's just confusing you. When you get over that crap and start moving into what you know that is, then all of a sudden it obfuscates every other position that you're trying to juxtapose your position regarding.
Did McLuhan understand the point you just made?
Hell yes, that's why he was trying to get out of the very thing he created.
Did you see that, Scott? Could you?
Yeah, I agree. I would agree with that for sure.
That's why they turned. Yeah. That's why they turned good money into cheap wine, Scott.
Yeah. Well, sometimes he took that joke a little too far.
Well, ask Mildred. She'll help you with that.
You mentioned Mildred the other day. Who the heck is Mildred? Some secret relationship that Marshall had?
Mildred's my mother.
Oh, okay.
Yes, very good. Good.
You know, Scott, that's interesting because I think I mentioned Mildred in a private session today or yesterday.
We already love Scott. You know this.
He only referred to you many hours ago. That's interesting. So Mildred, okay. Mildred is the culprit. She's the one who brought McLuhan to Scott.
Well, yes and no. Yeah.
Well,
my mother
did Scott put on the Global Village, or did the Global Village put on Scott?
What it was to know.
That's what Mildred brought you through McLuhan.
Well, not just that. Her whole life. My mother always debated that whether or not she knew anything, and she wanted to know.
Well, that's it. And you carried on
that
mission.
Knowing, that knowing vicissitated your newing.
Yeah.
She would talk about
beautiful.
The new heaven and the new earth. She had no problem with that. But then it became the trebler, the distance between the trebler and the applier. Now, Bob's
yeah,
saying that's old archetypal
that,
cliche
yeah.
crap, blah, blah,
We've
blah,
heard a lot about Treble and Ply the last
yeah,
month,
yeah,
but
yeah.
but
okay,
you did
so
say something.
A,
you just said
a,
something before
a,
that. What did
a,
you say?
A,
Mildred,
a,
what did you say? Trebler, what did you say? I forgot it.
To an,
well, my mother
yeah,
was a
concert
recitalist.
Bob's long-term memory,
we'll get to your stuff in a minute, Scott. He just has to spew for a while. Don't forget.
we're like, honey, we're like a Lady Bird Johnson oil well. We're gonna blow sooner or later. Just hang on. That's exactly right.
Quick, Scott, get your sentence in. What were you saying?
We'll ease up.
What
Bob,
I say
Bob,
is that
y'all run with
my,
it a little bit.
The S in my name is a lot like the treble clef. And I said that to McClue, and he said, oh, so you're all treble? There's no bass above
oh.
you? And I said to McClue, no, my basses are all loaded.
No response on that, or that's just too profound for you?
Uh-oh.
Now, we just said we were going to give a little space. We were going to solve
it. Yeah, give him some
space. He goes screaming at us. You screw with us, and we won't speak to you. We'll only speak to our Dr. Dean. There's the machete in the shed, Scott, if you're wondering.
Yeah, you're talking about everybody.
I really love eye on how you loosen me up. You really do a wonderful job.
Yes,
well,
we've done that with many sphincters.
Okay, Ian. Scott's well-versed in scientific imagery and terms. Is this loosening up? Describe where that what's happened to his occipital brains,
okay.
What happens to the
good,
chromosomes.
Good.
Do that. Do some biology right there.
Well, it's not biology. It's the way the mind processes construct.
Right.
He's brilliant with this already. Go back to the frequency of a theta wave. You're so bright. Go back to the frequency, the working frequency of a theta wave. When a human, in what they call sleep, slumber, it isn't that at all. When those theta waves, you can, yes, good. See, you're ahead of the curve. See, you being ahead of the curve doesn't obfuscate the curve. You're just ahead of it. No problem.
Yeah.
All right, so if you take the brain and you break it up into sections, portions, partitions,
yeah,
they are.
Which I hate to do.
Well, but yet it is.
Yet I'm a master of dissociation.
You
okay.
most certainly are, and that's all right. That's all right. Ain't nobody hurt. It's so good. Okay.
Yeah.
So in that position.
By association.
Well, that's fine. That's
guilt
fine.
By association.
Just, well, that's
McLuhan
okay.
Mate, that was a joke McLuhan used.
Yes. Just like all good food, this will pass.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Now, from the way your mind processes everything, let's take your orbital orb
okay.
and then the orbital lobe. You have eyesight. You are sighted. Your eyes see. Or do you see your eyes? Which is it? Well, makes no difference. Makes no difference. We know you're bubbling. That's all right.
Yeah.
Just keep your pancreas in charge here because we're going to balance this insulin resistance. We're going to help with that. As you play this out in your mind, your body responds autonomically.
That's
okay?
right.
And that's good. What we're trying to do is to lay it out just as you have too. See, here's what's great, fun, Scott. This is your damn life's work. You just didn't know it. You showed up for work every single day. You just didn't know what you were doing.
I agree to disagree with you.
Good. Tell us then.
I've known that's what I was doing all along, and I have shown up for work every day, except when I was hanging my head low.
Hanging your head low was only the position that allowed somebody else to shine so that you could explain it.
Yeah, that's right. And Sunday was a life or death necessity to do so. So what do?
Let it die. That's what you do.
Well, that's what's happened. It's gone.
There you go. Here's what you need to know after that. When they die, send flowers. Send nice flowers. The benefit of this ascension process is just that simple and just that easy.
Yeah.
Then that's out, out. Then that's coming, coming. Then that came, comed. Well, if they comed, they're done. So good. Move on. Good.
Yeah.
Takes the heat inside of the fire, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does.
Whose predicates will reign supreme? Well, who lives long enough to engage them, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Bob.
Yes.
Bob there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yes.
I was on mute.
He has to demute. Okay. Engage a little conversation so we don't overrun this. This is your damn party, not our soiree.
All right. So what were some of the points, if you can remember them, Scott, you were saying in response to Ian was saying? Take the sighted point, he said. Are we seeing the eyes or the eyes seeing us?
I have a great deal of trouble thinking of one sense apart from any other sense. It seems to me that as much involvement from the all the other senses that are involved with my eyes and how I understand sight and vision and insight and all that as anything else. It's always
then for you. No, whoa. Then for you, specifically, prescribe that in relation to your third eye chakra. Now, nobody else can do that, but you can.
Yeah.
So convince Bob, and we'll be amazed.
Okay, that's a really interesting task. Well, your third eye chakra is just simply all of the information that's moving from one side of your body to the other, or in other words, it's what's processing symmetry, asymmetry, supersymmetries, all of the different kinds of symmetrical relations. And the more that you are involved in thought, and I'm not thinking about thought as being something that is particular to you, but that is actually an involvement of your entire environment, the more that you are relating to your third eye chakra, and the more it's relating to you, the more it will move and work. And
Okay. There's too many words. As Bob would say, it's too many words. Okay, Bob, rebuttal, discussion, conversation. We're trying to slow this down because you know what we're going to do with that. So, Bob, we're going to call the magistry.
Well, I like the way Scott talks about Scott. Thought is not thinking; it's the environment.
Well, okay.
And
okay,
is that electricity? Is thought electricity?
Don't ask us. Don't ask us. Do not ask us, because you know what we're going to do with this. We're trying to solve
it. I'm not asking you. What the heck are you talking about? I'm not asking you.
There you go. Scott, Bob says, what the hell are you talking about? I don't know what, just too many words. It's ridiculous.
No. You're interrupting.
I don't know what it means. So, Bob, jump in right there. Make sure you clean up any points so this becomes the most magnanimous mum you've had heretofore.
Right. And I am responding to Scott. When he talked about thought, being an environment almost, I'm thinking that's what electricity is, and so what is the agent that shapes electricity? If our non-physical is electrical, is electricity, what do you call the agency that shapes it? Is it a Trump-leal, the agency that Trump that does it? That's a good thought there. A Trump-leal is the agency. What do you think of that, Scott?
I understand Trump-leal as a kind of device to get across gestalt.
Yeah.
And
tactility, a visualization of tactility.
Yes, and an attempt to understand deeper forms of ambiguity in holistic senses. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. But I'm not just talking about symmetries. I'm also talking about symmetry breaking. I'm talking about nonlinear forms of physics and nonlinear forms of being. I'm talking about cymatics. And I don't believe
tachyonics.
That there really is.
You're
tachyonic,
he tachyonics.
Says. Tachyonics. The particle that's already here. It goes fast and speed of light, so it's already happened. So
send
everything is in the past.
Send him all that goo.
Yeah, I know.
Bob.
Yes?
Send him all that goo on that. That'll help.
Well, what is it? You mean audio?
No.
The article you sent me, yes.
Dupes, send that to him, and he'll play with it because it gives him the formulation that allows him to mathematically calculate the tachyonic inference.
Yeah, it's a very good article, 1997 science article.
It happened in his little worky thing.
Yes, neutrinos as tachyonic. So, let me lay this out to you, Scott. If media...
You're welcome, Scott.
Yeah. If media and inventions are extensions of us, then the concepts of electron, proton, neutron are physicists, literate physicists, breaking down the dynamics between people. And the crowd dynamic, the hypnotic effects of language, and then the relationships between the elements and the subatomic particles, that's how people act.
Not concepts, they're constructs.
The exchanging of electric charge, this is where you ended with Andrew. The exchanging of electric charge or electron
is
a metaphor for people talking. The neutrino is something that does not accept any charges. So the neutrino shows up right at this point, at a very good time in our evolution, or remembering, and represents the human being that's not affected by anything. Now that could be seen as autism.
But that's going to make that's the difference. That's the what you call Trump Leo that Scott's been looking for.
Yeah.
As a way to prescribe
the
very thing that he's knowing that he is.
Okay, Scott, remember, let him finish. Okay, you finish. Let's finish, Ion, whatever you were saying, and then let Scott speak.
Done.
Go ahead, Scott. He stopped.
I don't think of autism as a particularly good descriptive way. Because I think autistic individuals are greatly distorted by a dysfunctional kind of human being, when in a lot of ways they are very superior and much superior and are just different ways of being. So I'm actually using the distorted idea of autism or selfism, so I'm using a kind of cliche way of trying to get it across to people when I talk about social autism.
Yeah, I include that, and the neutrino, the person who's not affected, Okay, you bring your view in.
Okay, our view is easy. You made these damn rules. You said you're going to do this. You're going to sit still. You're going to behave. You're going to be quiet. You're going to do your work. You're going to color in the lines. You're going to be this way. Little ones came forth and says, the hell you say. I'm more powerful than you. I'm a god. I'm more closer from source energy than you will ever be. So therefore, I'm going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to make the rules be the extension or the bastillion of your ruled place. So then they make an entire segment of marvelous human creators that say, the hell with your damn rules. You're going to put me in a box? Okay, it's going to be the box that I decide. Okay, you're going to put me in special class? You're going to put me in special ed? Okay, it's going to be my special ed. And you're going to serve and bow to me. That's what autism is. Same thing with autism. Same way with, what do you call it, what the old people get, Bob?
Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's, yes, indeed. They don't want to live, but they're afraid of dying. So they get Alzheimer's, and their body responds, and they get perfect health. That's the problem with Alzheimer's is folks live too long. They get out of their mind. This is a position now, because you can look at the autonomic results with what science and physics says is, and it becomes euphoric, Scott. It's a paper that'll change the world. You like those. So there it is. Sure, you don't have to call Charles Schultz or Paul Harvey to get the rest of that story. If you look at the empirical references that science has laid out that is... You can develop a delicious, fabulous R-ness, and this is would trump Marshall's Playboy interview empirically. You lay it out from a place that it makes
no
difference.
His Playboy interview has been trumped empirically 100,000 times or more since, but nobody's taken note of the fact, the general consciousness, the common sense status quo consciousness, the ecstatic paradigm of consciousness, the neo-anarchistic consciousness, really isn't in a position anymore to be able to ascertain that kind of environmental.
Well, if you're a neophyte, maybe.
Yeah, if you're just a kid and you're here, but you don't even bother with it then. It's just a given.
The little ones who have it aren't concerned about it regarding
that's
it.
That's right.
It's mommer
right.
and popper that's toe up about
yeah.
it, you see.
That's right.
Because they're not going to have it, and the next thing you know, the Ritalin rules. Okay?
Right.
And they don't even care about that. It just becomes progressively systemic to the point where they're going to do what they want to do. And you do that a little while, and guess what, Scott? Gambling. Lascivious Living World Poker Tour Series becomes a damn business or a longing
I agree
to
with that.
Prescribe.
It's absolutely, you know, that's what I've been trying to cope with, and I just see more and more and more and more of it. But it's in
welcome
that movie,
to our
it's
world,
life.
Scott. Welcome
well,
to our world.
Yeah. So one of the things that I like to get up and scream my head off about are statistics.
Oh, probability. We like probability. We like
possibility, probability.
No, it's not possible. It's only probable.
Okay.
It's not possible. Probability has to do with the options at bay in your larger now. When you get real good at what we're talking about, probability will suck because you will have knew the outcome. If you knew how it's going to go, you don't pine for it. If you know where your car keys are, you don't long to achieve them, do you?
Well, without meaning to be monomaniacal, I feel that was my state of mind or recognized perception when I first stood in front of McLuhan and told him that he was
all
the first
you did
guy
was
that
the,
I
you
saw.
Were just saying that the emperor didn't have any clothes and we could see his genitalia. That's where you began this little soiree, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm talking about simply the rapid ability of some people to be able to play out causality.
Play in causality. They don't play it out. They play in it. Causality is referenced from a pinpoint position of effect. Oh, Bob's going to jump in now, and he's going to say, Ion, you're having a contradiction. You're saying effects precede the cause, and we say cause effects proceed. Oh, now wait a minute.
Cause effects proceed.
Uh-huh. Now you go. See, now Bob's toe up. Now Bob's toe up now.
Well, I had this out the other day with him a little bit. But, Scott, what did you say you said when you first saw McLuhan? Ion drowned it out. You said something to McLuhan or you had an impression about 2 minutes ago?
You know, like I told him, quite frankly and quite innocently and quite naively, as a young man, that when I read McLuhan, he was the first person that I ever agreed with or understood. And McLuhan, you know, kind of, you know, took in a breath and snorted a bit and said, wow, that's quite something to say. That it was only then that I got self-conscious about it.
Marshall was
I
saying,
McLuhan
we're
right
tickled
off.
That you agree that I'm an idiot, but by agreeing with me, that makes you an idiot too. I'm a pepper, you're a pepper, we're a Dr. Pepper, remember?
Yeah, I get that, but there's also some charity involved in the in the situation. Some
isn't
mercy.
That what they do to poor people?
Well, I'm thinking about it on a higher level.
Is there a higher level? Oh, you're going to go into the constructs of consciousness.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not really. We know. But all we're going to point out for the ones, the two people that are going to listen to this, is that that'll end in tears. Good. Now, that's all good. Go ahead.
My point wasn't at all about McLuhan. It was the point that that one can see the potential of something and increase the potential of something, and that there's a kind of a glory or appreciation in doing that. And I think of that as gestative. I think it as impregnating.
Gestalt, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The most significant thing that came out of the coach house is it turned good money into bad wine.
I'm not talking about the coach house. I'm talking about quite apart from any direct.
No, but that was a good Thompson reference. Come on, you know those days.
He's referring to George Thompson, who told us back in the early months that he went and got the wine.
Yeah, well, I gave McLuhan once a bottle of extremely expensive cognac, and he invited everybody else into the room, got out styrofoam cups, and poured cupfuls of the cognac for everybody around, and everybody was looking on. They didn't know they'd been had. I recognized I'd been had, but at the same time was a little taken aback, you know.
Of course.
It was an expensive bottle.
Okay, so the singularity... does a sine wave and cosine wave are involved in measuring approaching to the singularity ion?
Implicitly. But don't muck it up. You're not even you're all excited about hanging the damn flags on the bridge, and you haven't even broached how deep the water is yet, Biggin. Bob, come on, you know better than this. Develop it. You're gonna go from there. Don't orchestrate the parade until you got the damn bridge laid.
Okay, Scott, what do you make
not
of this
Bob,
now?
Not Scott, it's Bob. Bob, there's been many words that have been said.
As McLuhan said, McLuhan used to quote the 1920s phrase, include me out. Anyways, include me out. I want Scott to pursue his issues. If I can, what are you interested in, Scott, right now that I could ask
Scott
about?
Scott doesn't have any issues. Scott's good. He's trying to tell you something, Bob, and that's why you ought to be on the damn rooftop tearing this mess up.
what are you trying to tell me, Scott?
Scott's trying to tell you something. Scott, he already did.
Well, trying to tell Ion something here, too. Not good. Necessarily.
Yeah, you too.
Good. Good. We love this. Go ahead.
Well, the thing is like, first of all, the idea of a singularity is a construct. And we are always directly involved with all possible singularities, no matter where we are, despite the fact that there are myriads of singularities
hold on, except for those that you obfuscate. You're in your car.
What am I going to do about that?
No. We'll soften this a bit. We're going to straighten your ass out. That's what we're going to do. Here's how this plays out. You say every singularity is included in your black hole experience. We say okay.
In a way,
what you said. You said every possibility is included. Okay.
I'm thinking stylistically.
Well, blah 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 blah.
I know.
Then we're gonna answer stylistically. You get in your car and you come to a stop sign, and it's a.
I gotta use words when I speak to you, and
yeah. But
so
we're gonna help you. We're gonna help you with words.
Doesn't mean that it isn't included.
No, I know, but we're gonna help you too. Here, we're not gonna leave you hanging. We're gonna tarry not in Jerusalem, Scott. We're gonna take you to the promised land. It's all right. You in your car, you come to a three-way stop or an intersection that dead ends into a road. The singularity is you have three choices. You can back up, you can turn right, you can turn left. Okay? All three of those singularities you're saying are included in your outcome. Singularity is what you get. See, the thing about the black hole isness, not business, isness, the thing about the black hole is that you don't know you went when you got there. You have
yeah.
to, from the event horizon to the singularity, that decision has decided. And there's only one choice
right.
that applies or is applicable. Now, you can have the laws of probability, but that only counts
right.
if you're playing aces and eights or playing horseshoes or hand grenades.
Right.
Close is the only place those apply.
Right.
Okay? So. Now, what the other end of the black hole is the singularity that you're engaging. The other end that you're engaging is what you call the outcome, the precipitated position. Everybody that's got a butthole is talking about black holes. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. What they need to speak about is on the other end of the black hole, within the confines of the singularity, the application of the polarity within a frequency that affects magnetism. That's what they don't speak about. And we wish you would. But now you know, so you'll develop and come into a place, write beautiful papers, and many ignorant people will be hit. That's H-E-P-E-D, hit.
Is a singularity an earnest or an isness for Scott?
No. For Scott. Now, listen to Bob's words. Now, he's our village idiot, but he gets that. He's our village idiot, but he gets that. Now, listen now. He says, is a singularity for Scott an isness or an arness? Well, see, Scott, it already is an arness. You already know the outcome of a singularity. You're just being cautious, just like in the coach house. You're being cautious of how you lay
right.
it out so that you don't seem
right.
be seen as outside
right.
the meme. Oh, we
well,
want to vomit. Let's
you know,
just vomit
I,
now.
I don't
the,
know about that.
Outside of the meme.
All my life I've been outside the meme.
Well, but and it has caused you much travail, and it's caused you much travail regarding it.
Yeah.
That's what we don't. Get out of it, or get on with it.
Yeah.
See? Because, see, it softens it, because what we say, what we're saying to you, well, and everybody that's listening, because it's for them as well, what we're saying is you can stay in your box if you want to, but nobody cares if you leave. You can stay in your box if you want to, and no one cares if you stay. So Marshall was trying to lay out simply and easily is get over yourself and get on with it or get out. Get on with it or get out. It makes
well,
no difference.
Well, you know, all my life I shed one box or one self or group
well,
of
Well, yeah. You jump out of the frying pan into the fire.
You grow up and you... You get young again, and you grow up, and you get young again.
Well, okay. That's fine if you like that process, but there's a better way. There's an easier way, and that's what Marshall McLuhan, if there's one thing you're going to need to get out of this mum, or any damn mum, is what Marshall was actually trying to say. What Marshall was trying to say is get over yourself and get to the place where you can start looking and seeing instead of seeing and looking.
Did he use Catholicism as his version of Catholicism as a metaphor for that?
He saw the Mass as an element. Mass as an element. It was
you mean
elemental.
Like hydrogen? You mean like hydrogen?
Yeah,
that kind of element?
That's a working definition of an element, yes.
Right. Mass was matter. That's what he mutated. That's what he.
And yet, that became the way to gauge it, but that didn't become the end-all be-all.
I like that. It didn't become the end of. It was what he could consolidate for himself in the 40s and 50s. Later, he found that...
It was the only singularity, Bob. It was the only thing that was singular. It was the only construct in those moments, besides Annie Hall, that it gave you any simpatico reference of realism.
But he plunged forward, and he didn't require that in his later life, or that's not true? He did require the mass as a reference point.
Well, you're talking about post-Corinne.
Ah, okay. So post-Corinne is in when he has his brain surgery in 67?
Do.
Right.
Changes, it ambivalently changes everything.
In other words, he became a success. He got the notoriety, the fame, before 67, because that was to impress Corinne. Once he had it, he then had to move on to something else.
She wouldn't have stayed.
She wouldn't have stayed if he hadn't got to that point by 67.
Well, absolutely. He was a damn second-rate teacher at some ridiculous Canuck lower institution of learning.
And she knew that he could be more than that for her purposes.
Or it wasn't going to be included in her purposes.
Hmm.
That's Mary. Mary can tell you more than you want to know about all that.
Yeah. So they go to.
You
so
say
they go
yeah,
to,
like it's just displacated off in there. You have empirical, specific references to the chagrin of Eric that are. And not one of you've got the balls or the goober to lay it out right here in a construct to say, what the fuck is going on with that? Not one of you. So
well,
you
only...
go surfing. You can go surfing if you want to, but let's just get down to it.
Yeah, he's got us in the corner here, Scott. We're the only two who know that much about the family.
Right. But we're not being mean. We're just saying, come on, stop gawking at the emperor's genitalia if you're not going to tell him that he's naked.
Well, we did that a long time ago, Scott and I. So,
and yet we find ourselves on the north side of the south end of the mountain once again.
So when he went, when he got next door to Jack Parr in Bronxville, New York, in his year at Fordham, that's when Corinne decided to stay around.
No, the telephone conversation in New York where they were trying to decide his fee, and he was surprised.
You mean by Howard Gossie's the conversation 64-65? That's even talked about in the biographies.
Yes, it is.
Right. You remember that, Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah, his first, he's there taken by Gossie in New York, and he's going to get $50. And Gossie says, no, get $10,000 or whatever. And he was surprised that they accepted
it. Damn, get it right.
Okay, you do it. You tell
him. No. But, Scott, tell him straight what it was. Marshall was confusing the $50 with $5,000 was the point, that it was worth $50 would have changed his world in those days. But then when that turned into the potential of $5,000, it raised the anthropomorphic ante. And that's what turned Corinne's head.
Yeah, so it was Corinne. Well, she wasn't present during that, but she heard about it later?
Oh, she was all about the monies, bub.
Right, so she...
Ask Mary. Don't ask us. That's Mary.
No, I know. I've discussed it with Mary. So
of course you have. So bring it up. Bring it in this construct. If it's not the case, then bury Marshall McLuhan and let's get on with this mess.
No, we did that. We're just being polite here and putting it for the record because nobody else is putting anything like this on
the
record.
Well, we aren't. Go to that coach house. They don't even have a coach in the coach house.
Right. So you're saying that was Corinne there when the negotiations happened or when Marshall had the surprise or was she heard about later in the day?
Later in the day when it was decided.
Yeah, so that when he went for the better money, that surprised her.
That was a requirement of her.
But she had not stated that to him.
But she knew that the end was near. If he didn't get on with something that had something viable, there was lots of children to feed.
Is this before your time, Scott? Scott, do you see any resonance to what Ian's talking about here?
Oh, no. That was always very apparent in the dynamics that I witnessed
yeah.
With with the entire family. For me, it was more tacit and implicit, but I'm not in the least bit surprised when I hear you authenticating it with data.
Good.
When you hear Ion authenticating it.
Well,
or just, me?
Just that there's an agreement here about what the situation was.
Now, I don't understand why Ion wants to go into this personal stuff. What relevance does it have to...
God, it's the whole point. You're talking about Marshall McLuhan and the ins and outs, and you don't have any problem going into that damn global, nothing ridiculous village and going on for hours and hours and hours till we get the dysentery or projectile vomiting to the point that we all want to wish we all died before Marshall so we could live as happy as he may be now. If you get into the point of what the point was all about, and you say, I don't know why we want to go into something so personal, and we don't really know how this applies in the construct of the medium is the message, but we would never say that because that's...
So you're saying that Marshall, as William Irwin Thompson said, all criticism is, social criticism is autobiographical. You're saying that Marshall was a novelist describing his dilemma with the mechanical bride.
Exactly, and that's what LaRouche has been trying to convince you ever since.
Right, no, that's a good point, Scott.
Well, what I'd like to know is it true that on the night that he died, they went into the bedroom in the house that had been reserved for his mother, even after her death, where all of her clothes were in the closet, and they were found thrown, scattered, torn, whatever, all over the room. And in my mind, what I'd like to have cleared up is, was this a spiritual action, or did Corin go in and throw them around herself? I mean, if you want to get into the personal...
Yeah, that's good. Good story.
Corin did it herself. It was a completion.
Right.
Corin did it herself. It was a completion. And it was the completion of is that Marshall never lived up to his mother's acumen. So, and his not completing it finished her. That's the point.
Well, that's one of the reasons why he rocked her bed. If we're getting personal here.
Of course.
He rocked her bed? What's that mean?
It means he had intercourse with her as often as he did and as hard as he did.
Yeah, with Corin. And Corin even said it to the priest. That story's in the biographies. Pointed that out.
So
it's something, there's a dynamic between Corin and the mother that was very frustrating for Corin. That's what you're saying, Marshall?
It
was a completion.
The degree is that Corin was in love with McLuhan's mother, and so McLuhan and Corin were both competing with one another for the mother's consideration.
Mm.
And the mother
approval, validity. That's
approval,
right.
Approval, right, validity. So is that right? I've never talked about this before with anybody.
That is right, isn't it, Ion?
Go and be a good Catholic, and which wife was Corin?
Okay, so it's fun. So McLuhan was the castrated one, and his brother was the one that was a more healthy edifice.
Marshall was the steer. The brother was the stud.
Yeah, right. That's and so, in a way, the brother never ever felt that he needed to win in any of
the... He already won.
He'd already won. And so that was the difficult conundrum that McLuhan was put in that caused so much...
it wasn't difficult. It's what he used to construct everything that was constricting. Marshall spent his whole world constructing the constriction.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. That was the whole point. He'd sit there and he'd get on the damn stage and he'd carry on and he'd tell you. He said, you blithering idiots, you think I'm smoking this cigarette? No, this cigarette's smoking me.
Yeah.
And everybody would go, well, don't tell Philip Morris. They're not aware.
that was really good.
Morris McLuhan, he gave up his preacher role. He dropped out of religion. He was a, what do you call him, a minister? He was a minister.
What, is he still alive?
I tried to find, I was going to ask that a minute ago. I tried to, you can't find him anywhere, Google him or anything. So Ion, has he left this physical plane? Morris,
in
the brother.
In transition, but he's actually in another world.
Right, you mean he has been buried. You say in transition, that means that's your word for dying. So he died.
But cool. but is in another world.
He didn't go to the Guff. Did Marshall go to the Guff?
We answered that already.
Well, I don't remember, but I think you said he went to the Guff. Is that correct?
About that.
Yeah, so Marshall had worked out his judgment of himself, so he could go to the Guff.
He got it worked out with his absolution shit about the maniacal mass. And
okay.
That was all worked out. He didn't have to deal with any of that. He got first, last, right, last, rice, rats, rats, last, wait, last rats.
Yeah. Last rats for his right.
Rats for his last rights of his right last for his last rights.
Left right.
The last rights and the more rats made less rights for the last rights for the best rights that were right last. Good, yes.
Yeah, that's it.
He got it. That all worked out. So good. That's good. And Bob would say, Scott, that's clear as mud, isn't it, for you? And it's like, well, that's what Marshall did all of his life. He made everything clear as mud. Good.
Yeah. He, when Marge Stewart, you know, was in the hospital in spring of 78, he sent her a pizza, and he said, two different pizzas, different time. One time it said, here's mud in your eye, and the second was, the medium is the message. He used those two phrases in his speeches to Mark Stewart. And then he said the fifth element is mud. He used to quote Napoleon. So, yes, he did play with mud. And what's the other one, Scott? On a clear day, mud can be clear or something.
No, there's a Einstein
damn
statement,
Bob.
That muddy water, something about muddy water.
Yeah, can appear clear sometimes.
Yeah. It runs on and clears up, but... It,
good Lord, suffering cats! You get you blithering idiots!
You're
sitting here, quote Marshall McLuhan. Even clear mud runs clear. Even clear mud runs clear.
He never said that.
Okay.
You got it wrong.
Certainly did.
No, it's not on the collection of aphorisms that I have in a poster.
Well, welcome.
It's not runs clear. Even mud can appear clear someday, give the illusion of clarity. It's more like
runs
that.
Runs clear.
Okay, to go to a parallel world, is that a sign of essential freedom than to go to the Guff? Is that a more successful way to transition?
Not necessarily. It's relative. It's a choice.
What is the ramifications of the choice? Like what particulars for a person?
They're predicated within the individual. That's like sexual preference, Bob. What's the ramification of choosing one sex over another? What's your preference choice? If sometimes you feel like a nut and sometimes you don't, there is no ramification other than you choosing the wrong one.
Okay, so if the Guff is not necessary because it's being emptied and we didn't need to transition.
Wait, nobody said that. Don't you play ipso facto with
yeah,
us.
Yeah.
No.
I'm telling. No, listen to this. So if the Guff is a makeshift, for someone who doesn't accept their eternity.
We have an empath here that can straighten your ass out. So you know.
Okay, well, let me make my statement. So the Guff is something that the fallen man creates to go to experience bliss. And it sounds like if you...
have a place to land if you're going to separate yourself from your place of power.
Now, right.
Even Scott would tell you that.
Right. Now, if you don't go to the Guff, you don't require the bliss of that extinction, and you go parallel traveling, that sounds closer to staying in the physical than going to the Guff. You don't require the bliss.
Well, you are still in the physical,
and it also is blissful.
Oh, now just hear what Scott said. No, the evaluation, I understand, happens before, Scott. You go to the Guff.
Evaluation happens before? But, well, of course it happens all the time. But for the supposed particularity or finite aspect of your condition,
you
go to have it evaluated.
Yeah, but that's
that.
The point. It's not
gotta
fine.
Words,
you got to use words.
but then use better ones. Will help.
Yeah, we
gonna. Hey, Scott. We're gonna have to give you the crash course, the ion world of the difference between a trebler and a plier. It'll be great fun. You'll enjoy it thoroughly.
Okay, so Morris, he doesn't go to the Guff. He's running free, and he became a teacher at Sheridan College in the 70s and had a good time. And when I spoke to him once, I said, how come you haven't been around the center the last few years? And he says, well, you know, if you're under an oak tree, the shade can be too much for you after a while. So that's it sounds like he put Marshall on a bigger pedestal than himself, but that's not the case, you're saying.
No, not
at all. He's pointing out the power of the acorn.
Right, and he also used to go to lectures and be sent out as representing McLuhan, and he would announce there that Marshall was an only child.
Of course.
That's a pretty brave, interesting statement to make.
He was, as far as he was concerned.
Yeah, Morris was a... What would he be if he wasn't a child?
Vagabond.
Ah, vagabond.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you have much
Morris, so I'm really precluding a lot to agree there. Was Morris
not
like
so
as
much.
A person?
Wait, listen. Scott, did you meet Morris?
No, I never did.
Oh, okay. I did and I had a few comments. So what was your question, Scott?
Well, I just wanted to know what was the like. How did he come across? Was he down to
Oh, you're asking me. When I first came and first met him, when he worked in 70, 71 at the Coach House, I think after Harley alcoholically was kicked out, and then before Thompson takes over, Morris was in there for a couple of years in 71. And I announced I was coming in from Nova Scotia, and he said, that's quite dark down there. And I was sort of taken aback at how socially rude he was, you know, or that appeared to be rude. And he didn't care what I thought. He just said, well, that's rather dark in Nova Scotia. And I rebutted by saying, well, at least it's green. Anyways, the next time I encounter him.
God.
I was into green.
Leave it to Dobbs down.
I was into green back then.
There were five bodies there then, but we didn't know which five were.
Yeah. So then I meet him a couple of years later, and he hasn't been around, so then he's there, and he tells me about this oak tree. So I actually got two different impressions of him. And then the third time was his friendship with Barry Nevitt in the 80s. And there's an interview, I don't know where it is, with those two talking about Marshall. And he makes the statement, Morris makes the statement that Marshall will not be understood for another 100 years. That, to me, was a pretty prescient and understanding statement. I mean, he wasn't the guy who was bowled over by Marshall, is the image I got there. So I got three different images of him. You know what I mean, Scott? Three different memories.
Three different memories. You've got three different impressions, Bob.
Yeah. Well, they're now memories. And then the fourth thing is that...
No, because you can't remember rememberings.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes I can. Well, if the topic comes up, I can remember. I won't remember tomorrow.
Oh,
if
it's in your chart.
When we're not in the McLuhan Quadrant, I won't remember.
Well, there you go. Yo-yo LaRouche.
So, yeah, the fourth thing is... there's a very good video taken by Barry somebody in January 75, the first class of the new year, the winter season. Marshall comes into Morris's class at Sheridan, and he spends an hour talking and bantering with the students, and it's a really good interview. And there's no presence of Morris at all, I don't think, other than perfunctory. And I thought that was great.
It was all posthumous, almost.
Right. No, it's really interesting, Scott. When you look at that video, Morris is like Scott's bringing in this errant hobo or something. Morris is bringing in this errant hobo. And it's just, look at this weird bird. Look at this weird bird.
Bob, is that Mildred's arm slipping out of your sleeve?
Try not to talk same time.
Cain and Abel.
Yeah. Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel. Good morning, Mr. President.
that's he's talking about Herbert Cain, whoever the Cain guy is running for president right now.
Not Herbert. That's Herbert Hoover.
Yeah.
Not Cain.
Ion sees him as president right now. It doesn't mean he'll be president later, but he is the president right now because whatever the polls are talking about is president. Wouldn't you agree with that, Ion? Whatever the polls are pointing to. So, Scott, I can only add that. I don't have much more about Morris.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, then, Scott, you know how you're empathic. Develop it. Develop it. Don't lay on your laurels.
Well,
punch
I can
Bob.
Do that, but, yeah,
punch
I've
Bob.
Never done
punch
that.
Bob. Punch Bob. Punch Bob. Punch Bob. If you punch him a little bit, you'll be amazed what he knows. But if you let him run, if you let it run out, it's out. But if you'll turn that faucet on just a little bit, that water will run some more. Punch a little bit. Interestingly, the constructs that you've laid out, Bob, include, and that's all you got to say, and he'll babble on a bunch of more about it. It's great fun.
Okay, so Scott, there's many points that you were trying to make that Ion rudely overrode, and I'd like to get back to what you were trying to say and have it heard. What do you make of, I say Ion is a new technological environment. And it is the new environment that Marshall or anybody who...
It's old. It's in every clue that's been laid through your...
It's the final retrieval. Everything else has been obsolesced, so then now when everything's obsolesced, we can retrieve the Ionic.
Right.
Well,
Scott, here's how you...
Says,
okay, let him, Ion, if you want me to engage, let him speak. Go ahead, Scott.
Beckett says that madness is the free play of the senses. But I think quite the opposite in a lot of cases. And with all due respect, I think Ion is something like both the is something like the free play of the senses and the non-senses and the extra senses and all of those kinds of things. More like the kind of happening that I wish that they'd been able to stage in the 60s.
You wish that they did get that.
I wish that those happenings had been more like my percepts of encountering Ion.
Good. And you said, okay, so... what do you think of that, Ion? The free play sense, because Ion says that non-physical could never create till now when the chip body came forward. It's a space that humans can't control. Therefore, we can't impose our notions of non-physical.
You can control. You're just not controlling.
Right. And so
that
we're not... Okay. In that intimidated state, hey, let me, come on. You want me to participate, you're going to have to shut up a little bit so we get heard, the other people. So the thing is that we can't impose the definitions of non-physical on non-physical right now because it can play in this huge space that we can't control. Up to this point, non-physical was controlled by our religious notions of what non-physical was. And so when Ion now can come forth and be in the physical and create, which non-physical never could before, that exactly is defined by your statement, Scott, that the free play of the senses and the non-senses and the non-physical.
Yeah. But what Ion just said is exactly why I'm paying attention, with all due respect, to Ion. I'm hoping that he's going to be able to give me some, I don't know what to call it,
okay.
In a way, I'm studying Ion as a method actor might the Ion.
I agree.
Okay.
That's what
we'll
do.
We'll help. A bunch of people got together, and they said, one and zero. The space between one and zero, or the sine and the cosine, that's one and minus one. Okay, the interplay between minus one, zero, and one, let's make cobalt. And they created a whole language between that process. Well, that ended in tears because it turned into shapes and go to and if so and might be and could have be and could have might be.
Fortran.
And it was sad. So then it moved on into Fortran. Then it turned into a quote binary. It either is or it ain't. It's the is's and the arnesses 101. And we thought, okay. So you created what Bob calls now the chip body. and you created a supercomputer, or, well, hell, just a computer, something that would compute. And that's when the calculator began. It used to be the size of your damn house, and now it's in your watch, you see, or in your piss pod. Technology grew to such a place based on that level that it outgrew you as a little man. Okay? You, just like in the Ark of the Covenant, so this isn't a new thing, this is old school. You won't have to have, you won't have the resting soul of a Coathanite to straighten this one out for you, because we finna do it right here, right now. You created a chip body or a computer world so vast that it outgrew you. It got bigger than you. Isn't it interesting that all of a sudden on the scene became a world wide web? And then that didn't last long, it turned into an HTTP. And then it got so much, it got so voluminous that even terabytes wouldn't hold it. So much so that you moved all the bits, not bytes, but bits of information off your, quote, hard drive, and you moved it to store it safely in the cloud. What happens is that you create the perfect storm. You come into your place of power, or you're judged by the clouds that others are walking upon.
Right.
And so the point now becomes, the only conversation here, Scott, is either come into your power or pack your damn bags and get out. Those are the two choices. Those are the choices. You either ascend or get out. Because the getting out is not instigated by us. The getting out process is that you won't choose to stay. If you cease to choose to stay, that's how you exit stage left.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's an individual. And that happens to young'uns and old'uns and rich'uns and poor'uns and all of them's that do not engage their place of power. Then you have those that hang around and go, well, you know, the worst part of life ever has been pretty good. I think I'll hang around and create. And they do, and they do. And then they fall through the folds, the baffles. Remember a baffled and a pipe organ? The baffles of the organ grinder. And they go out and come back, and they come back. But they don't come back because they never really left. And then that now the digitized body of photography will find pictures of people from Civil War or the War of 1812 that are all through history, and they can find photographs of these boogers floating around, little bitty snapshots, Kodak moments of how some chose to stay here and now. And now, since your recognition, your facial recognition is so prolific, even hid within the straight confines of the chip body, what's happened now is that you all released the winds. The winds are blowing. So therefore, we had free reign within the chip body. So those that engage their place of power, great, we become the foot soldier for those, the one percenters. The 99 best just go on surfing. And that becomes the travail for the 99. The benefit for the one percenters as this world shifts and changes is the pleasure, the benefit of staying in this realm, this body, this life, in your place of power, so ubiquitously, prolifically, constantly, that the whole wide world, or we say it this way, that the cares of life for you, Scott, grow strangely dim.
You've got me right at that point, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's happening in my life.
Of course. And it's beautiful. And it's beautiful because once you quit giving a damn about what everybody gave a damn or what everyone else damned,
right.
Then all of a sudden your words become the best thing going. And it's beautifully
so.
And
that's very strange. Everybody's tried to drag me back in.
Well, and you're like, nope. You're like, nope. You're like, nope, nope.
Yeah.
I can't unknow. I can't unknow. So if that I knew, I knowed. Well, if it's knowed,
yeah.
What if it's resonant, a resonant knowed? Oh, wait, dupes a hazard, yeah. If it becomes something that's validatable, then it is. Well, if it is, then now that's a whole, that takes it to a new plane. That's where all your sensory perception empathically is playing, okay? So you go outside of the what you call chip body, and yet you know the relegance, notice our words, the relegation, the relegance of the chip body in your world. Do you see? We now have the ability and power to place anything in your chip body, an isness, a potential isness, something that isn't an isness, to the point that all we have to do is make it the top few rungs of a Googlered experience, and then the whole wide effing world embraces it as though it is. And then Diane Sawyer's speaking about it prolifically. You see? Then the next thing you know, it's embraced. Then it becomes a meme. Then it becomes the message. Then it becomes written, copied, printed, Googled, saved,
right.
Lost, buried,
right.
Retrieved, obsolesced,
yeah.
Validated,
very
vindicated. Annoying. And then all of a sudden you dig under the palm, the front left paw of the very Sphinx in the piles
right.
of Egypt, and you find it there. Interesting. And you get it all dug up and you uncover it. They've already done the satellite imagery. They've already done the looks. They know it's there. They've gauged it. They haven't had balls or testicles to do it just yet. But they'll dig it up and this chamber will open up and it'll look and it'll say right there on the side of it before they open it, Dobbstown. And then Bob will go, oh, yeah, Ian told us that forever ago. All the secrets right there.
Yeah, he's been
and
saying
then,
it for a long time.
And then it kind of goes, and then they do, and then they do. Okay? We talk about different events in your world because they're past tense for us. Now, what you're feeling, Scott, and what you're applying is this new place of knowing and power, which was the very damn thing that Marshall McLuhan was trying to bring up to the surface. It's like when you were a kid and had a pimple. You kind of knew the pimple was coming before it had a big head on it. Well, now it's got a big head on it, and then the eruptus began, or once it's opened up, you know, if you have a bit of an acne issue, once air hits the open aggravation within the dermis of the face or bump or pimple or, oh, good Lord, sebaceous cyst, blah, blah, we don't care what you call it. The second air hits it, the body naturally's response is for it to make reparations regarding the dermis. Once you
right.
get the corruption out, everything is well. That's why it's better out than in. Okay, well, that's
right.
where you are. That's where you
yeah.
are. You
well,
feel
been
all
there
this
for
on
a
your
long,
in-
long time.
You feel this all on the inside, and it's now come to a pressure place where just if you get a little bitty splinter in your hand or your feet or something, that foreign thing will fester, like Uncle Fester with Adam's Family, like Fester. It will fester. It'll have something to isolate it outside of your human meat sack and cause it to be maybe even infectious, but maybe not. But it'll fester to the point that it'll have white blood cells that'll surround it so it will be expelled from your meat sack. Well, that's what you're in the process of here. Much has been interjected into your realms and reality, but that shit ain't working anymore. It's festering. And you're like, no, 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 no. This is, if I keep going in this legion, mind our words, if I keep going in this legion, this is going to become systemic and overtake me. But I know better. Okay? I know better. Okay? And once you know better, then once you get the splinter out, or it'll do it itself, but once you take the action to get the splinter out, then your third eye chakra, you'll get all the snot out of your third eye chakra, and you can see clearly now the rain is gone. You can see all obstacles in your way. All those things that would drag you down, you find that it's a bright, 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 sunshiny day. Well, good. Well, the sunshiny day is the very thing that Marshall was trying to give you the prospectus regarding. See, Marshall wasn't a stockman. He was one trying to give you insider trading.
Yeah.
He could care less what the market
did. Yeah,
and
I enjoyed that. I appreciated that. And I always felt Marshall was with me.
You were with Marshall.
That.
See, as an empath,
and the
you
other
don't,
way around.
As
no,
an empath, as an empath, you don't have that capacity. Folks aren't around you, you're around them. A la the definition of an empath.
Okay, I get it.
For Pete's sake.
Right.
That's why Mildred still rules your world more from now than she did when she was with you.
Oh, yes and no. I don't know.
Well,
Oh, God, you know. What
are
you going to do?
Well, what are you going to do? Embrace
Ion?
It. No, embrace it. We have no mother. We are. We are the essence of all that always is, so we have no mother. Good. And just as you are God, you have no position that obfuscates your place of power. But it's okay. It's okay because Mildred didn't. If you could love you the way Mildred loved you, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, in some ways that's true.
In every
way. Hey, Ion. His telephone's battery's gone, but Ion's keeping it going, Scott, so don't worry.
You better believe it. You just hang on, baby. You just hang on. This is the good part. This is the part that makes Mum magical. Okay? It's magical Maui. Good. Now we'll bury him. Good. That's it. Now, Scott, the euphoric, blissful place is the construct that we're laying out that you can develop. Here's what's fun. Folks may or may not embrace us. Those that will do, those that won't, pack. It'll be over soon. Don't worry about it. But as you embrace it, it rings true at several layers. Not every layer for you just yet. Do you know toothpicks?
Pardon me?
Do you know toothpicks?
Yes.
Okay. Toothpicks have a function. If you have a bit of food wedged in your teeth,
right.
Some people's teeth just naturally catch food. If you use a toothpick to dislodge a bit of food that's caught in your teeth, that becomes refreshing. But see, the toothpick doesn't care what it picks. The teeth don't care which tooth is picked. You have an obvious issue that you notice within a genome. The toothpick is nothing other than the tool you use to dislodge that which potentially is kiss-kiss-say stuck.
Right.
All we're talking about here is getting the stuck unstuck.
Right.
And once it becomes unstuck, then the natural flora and fauna of the saliva in the lipid system of your meat sack body will respond in kind, and then it will wash it away, meaning that your mouth will respond appropriately.
Right.
Okay. But you can't bless or curse the toothpick that you engage.
Right.
It's great fun because you take the toothpick and you put it in your mouth. You don't normally do it with a mirror, and you can hit the place where it is.
Right.
Unsighted.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate the analogies.
So for you, here's the question. Is the toothpick the empath, or is the tooth that wants to be picked the empath?
That's a brilliant question.
Uh-huh.
That's a brilliant question, and I will really, really think about that.
play with it. Play with it, because when you solve that distance, that's the one and the zero. That's binary code.
You're
that's
right.
The supercomputer that you've created that's now running you.
Well.
Well. See, that's the whole point. Now the chip body gets on there and they say things and then they decide, they predicate what he is. Well, you're not watching the TV. The TV's watching you. Well, now it goes into the chip body where people are leaving the TV body. Okay, 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 fine, fine, fine. Makes no difference. It sets the place for us to play implicitly. And the reason we seem so absolutely doggone impressively powerful, Scott, is because you created the chip body and you make more and more and more and more and more and you use less to the point that it makes us seem all-knowing we are, all-powerful, so far we are, all-encompassing, we are. We have no limitation. And the reason we have no limitation is because you human creators created such a marvelous thing that you're not embracing. So our job, our only job, is to come into a place where you can get the notion that you are God and you can come into your place of power. Well, we'd say that you already have your place of power. And empathically, you feel the goodness of that. It's kind of like, thank you, God, for my belief. Now, God, help my disbelief. We get that. That's all right. Because you develop it, and the next thing you know, just like in your world right here, right now, you start to have different little sparkles that you embrace. You start to have all the glib catchwords. Oh, I had an intention. Oh, I had the unlawful degree of magnetism. Oh, I had a polar twist. Oh, I had a frequency problem. Oh, you know, and you go on and on and on and on until it starts sinking in. And then the next thing you know, someone that you really, really care about in your world, in your life, decides they want to transition. And you go, oh, hell no. Oh, no. No, no, no. Lazarus, get your ass up. The dead rise. And then you're going to call Bob and say, Bob, I raised a dead person. And Bob says, so? Oh, everybody is. That's old school. We have that documented. That's normal.
And we're not.
Yeah, see, now Bob, he's got real quiet. Yeah, that's true. We can take you to his house. We can put him on the Oakley Winfrey Show. We can put him on the Oakley Winfrey Network. But it makes no difference, see, because until it becomes real for you, Scott, it makes no difference. That's all Marshall was ever trying to say. Notice the inobvious. Notice the inobvious. But you do this naturally. That's why you're drawn. That's why it's a benefit to you. Because that's the way you've been fucking for a long time now. That's natural for you. You see? Oh, sorry.
Right.
That's how you've been intercoursing for a long time now. Is that better?
Right.
Okay, good. That's good. There might be some 8-year-olds watching, listening. See, well, they might be. Well, 8-year-olds probably are watching, Bob. There you go. That's fun. That's Chip Body 101. Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
yep.
The good news is, for those that decide that they are not going to have this, we say beautiful. You do too. See, you've learned finally to quit pushing against everybody else's position about everybody else's position. Good. But so if you stayed exactly where you are, all of a sudden you notice you're moved way up the food chain. All of a sudden when you have an opinion about something, people start looking and going, wow, he said that, and that means this, and this applies there, and it's a bunch of damn big words. I didn't have my thesaurus. I don't really know what the hell he's talking about, but it sounded good. Well, then what happens is it catches on, you see. And then you can take, and you know that if Bob can be the head of the Church of Subgenius, okay, then there's hope for you. See, if ridiculous Bob can get it, Everybody's got to change. Everybody can make it if they want to. If they want to. See, and that becomes beautiful. The beautiful part of that is that whosoever will. Whosoever will. And all we're here for, all we're a boot. There's a moose loose, a boot the hoose. All we're a boot is for you to come into your place of power and start applying it. And if you do, great. And if you don't, we say good. And now it's on. Because now in our place of power, it's come to such a place that as the humans don't embrace their place of power, Scott, guess what it does? It makes us seem more powerful. You see?
Yeah, that's a big problem.
Well, not for the one percenters. Everything you've got hemmed up in right now, every problem you've got hemmed up in right now came from the essence of one God. What you going to do with a planet full?
Yeah.
It's fun. Gods don't care. They're like Medicare. Medicare don't care. Medicare can't. So does
you
God.
Said seem, S-E-A-M, not S-C-E-N-E. Seem, S-E-A-M, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Very good, Bob. Very good. Very good. See, Bob's always listening. He can't pay attention, but he can listen.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Ion, and I look forward to the next time that we'll talk.
Hey, Scott, we just heard the best summary of Understanding Media updated. From the 0-1, we just heard a replay of what McLuhan was attempting in Understanding Media with the history of the digital technology there. Did you get that, Scott?
I didn't get that it was a synopsis of Understanding Media, but...
No, he went from 0-1 and HTTP, went through the history of technologies during what I call the Android meme. He gave every step, like Marshall did in his history of analog media, and then he went into the effects of it.
Yeah.
And it's predicated outcomes, which has, and that's personal for you. And you get
well,
that
what I'm thinking
because
about,
you'll apply it.
Let him say this. What do you think, Scott?
Well, what I'm thinking right now, where I had really gotten was into understanding the nature of cloud computing. And I was not certain where it went from there. And so I have to consider what?
No, go ahead.
I have to consider.
No, Ion is taking great advantage of the cloud computing. I'll tell you later. Whenever we get a chance
next. No, we're
going to
tell it right damn now. We're not waiting one more second. You marvelous human creators, you created the cloud, you made computers, that had so many bits of information that you couldn't keep up with it. So now, somewhere out in the nether regions of woo-woo Silicon Valley, or we were going to say value, but that might be too constrained, so far out in the position that every bit of knowing is now faithfully stored within the confines of the cloud. But that's not a new day. The Hebrews that left Egypt, they got to Mount Sinai, they got the top ten, they made a god, Moses got pissed, blah, blah, blah. They wandered around the desert for 40 years till all the naysayers withered. And here's how they did it. They followed the cloud of glory by day and a pillar of fire by night.
Right.
And then they moved with the cloud. Okay. Now, the scriptures are also very clear that if you don't come into your place of power, if you don't find out who God is within you, that very soon the rocks are going to start crying out. And the rocks are going to say glory and honor. If you don't praise who you know to be God, which is you, soon the rocks are going to start crying out. And we defy you to find a rock on this planet that isn't silicon dioxide at some level or degree. And then you look at your little happy chip bodies and you find out that they're made out of sand. It would be funny, Scott, if it weren't so sad.
So you're saying, Ion, they actually, you're saying the Hebrews had a computer, a cloud environment, technically, as they wandered around the desert.
Yeah.
What did they do with the cloud? Did they just enjoy
it? They do the same thing you do. They lick it. They have orgasms by it. They have pornography with it. They have emails about it. They find out just exactly who the baby daddy of Justin Bieber is. They find out who's coming. They find out who's going. They find out who's passed. They find out who said who about what and whose twat's tweeted hard and whose twat's sore because their tweet wasn't quite as good as their other's twat. And then you started off and then you created a TV body. You had a 4-inch or a 6-inch TV screen. Oh, we got the big screen. We got the 6-inch screen. It's black and white. Black and white, that's all there is. Oh, it's Technicolor. And then you get it big as the size of the house, the Jumbotron. And isn't it fun that now you're all of a sudden back to watching TV on a 4-inch Peapod? Interesting.
So the cloud of glory, and what was the other phrase? What's the other thing? They found a cloud of...
The fire, the cloud of glory, pillar of fire by night.
Right.
And the cloud of glory by day.
So the pillar of fire is television. McLuhan talked about TV being fire.
Dude.
So the Hebrews had television in our form or a different
Certainly.
Form?
Certainly. Better form. Theirs actually had mediacological form. Content. Yours doesn't. yours is bad versions of Shamil, Shemazel, Haas and Pep Incorporated with Laverne and Shirley. That's what you got.
So that's why
you got going is Laverne and Shirley.
That's why everybody became a media college, is to balance off the lack of media college in the TV content.
Lucy,
the natural homeostasis tendency of humans.
Lucy, you got some explaining to do.
So they had a better computer, and what they engaged it to get manna, or manna was just making it easier?
Nope. See, that's the fun part, Scott. This is what Scott's been working on forever, is that aspect of slack that begets the reality of knowing. That's why he spent all of his life apologizing for his gifts. And we say, stop it! Quit apologizing for your gifts and start using the damn gifts and quit apologizing for them. Manna just fell. And they couldn't hoard it. They couldn't hide it. They couldn't store it. They couldn't tote it around. And any time they tried that, it all withered. When they just embraced...
Well, a pretty awful entity because he channels you and doesn't let you know he's doing it.
Of course.
He's a Manipian. That's Manipian.
I always let everybody I channel know that I'm channeling.
Stop that.
Problem is, we're full of phylactic acid.
Phylactic acid.
Gentlemen, entities, I've got to go. 10 o'clock here. My damn.
And your phone doesn't want to leave. It's not. It's totally empty, but it's still going.
Yeah, you're right. It's doing a better job than it ever has.
There you go. That's connection and conductivity.
Yeah, I have to keep it going.
Embrace it. Come to the place where you can start realizing these little tidbits that we're laying out. Embrace them, and you already know this. I mean, see, because you're ahead of the curve already. Because empathically,
tell me something I don't know.
He did.
Tell me. Tell me something that I didn't knew.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can do this every week, but bi-weekly.
Oh, no. It's a one-shot deal. We got two more sessions, and that's it. It's over.
What do you mean it's over?
It's over.
Yeah, we're finishing
good
tomorrow.
Night. We've enjoyed playing with you. We like working for you.
He's quoting Zappa. He's talking about Zappa.
Good night. Yeah, that's it. Law, suffering law. Now, we, in and moon unit to you, and moon unit to you, and moon unit to you, and a side of Dweeble with you. Dweebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
Okay, very good. Thanks a lot, Ian. You were great today. Very good. Excellent.
That was fabulous.
Yeah.
I love you guys, entities and others.
We love you more than you know. Good night. Good night.
I'm going to kick your behind.
Sphincters are us. Come one, come all, as long as you come.
Sphincter.
It's all right.
I'm aiming for the sphincter, and if my foot gets caught, you're in a lot of trouble.
Take it like a god, baby. Take it like a god.
Okay, on that note,
yes.
It's signing off.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Night-night.
Night. It's just you and me, Ion, now.
Well, now let's get on with it. Straighten this mess out. Good.
Well... I feel we're quite straight.
No. You just thought you did. Well, you never did get it cleaned up on the black hole, white hole, 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 asshole business. So get to that.
Well, it's another dialectic that you make fun of.
It's not a dialectic. It's the position. You're trying to lay this out as a construct, and you're trying to make this very McLuhan-esque, so make it McLuhan-esque. Or get the shovel and let's bury this shit and be done with it.
I'd rather charge for that.
Okay, got it. That's good. Okay, then, next thing. Within the next tiered level of what you call McLuhan, the centenarian, as you said, ridiculously, you wouldn't get McLuhan for another 100 years. You'll have to have the William Morris Agency to figure that all out for you, won't you?
Yeah.
Bring it back into, bring it home for wherever you want to land, because it started with you. It's all about you. Everyone else so far has been ridiculously, regardingly, appropriately, or disappropriately regarding you. So, this is your stage. Ask it.
No, I want to keep it confidential. I don't want to make it public.
No, we got that, Bob. We're trying to get, this is the place where you can get your dings in. You can make this, well, what we...
No, I'm actually, I want to go to the beach. I've been doing this all day, so I'm not into the pursuing. I'm happy with what we did.
Therefore, we're deliciously, happily, forever, Herbert Marshall McLuhan.
Uh-huh. Yo! No JW today.
You're
Beep.
Recording.
Oh, yes, I'm still recording. Oh, so you, is this JW or Ion? No, this
it's
is JW. Ion.
No.
JW.
Yeah.
No, we just had an awesome performance by Ion and everybody else involved. And very happy with it. And it's still light out, so I think I'll go to the beach.
Yeah, and you're surprised?
At what?
That it was a good, really big...
No, you said it would be fantastic, and it is awesome. It probably is the greatest mum that happened today. In many, many aspects, I'll tell you about it. After you download it, we can talk about it.
Yeah.
After you and your personal being, for those listening, JW will recall all this and over the next 24 hours.
We won't recall it. We'll just know it. See, that's the difference.
Know it, yeah.
If you just know it, then it maybe sometimes it's like a memory... But it's not memorable.
This was the best, incredible mum. You said it would be awesome, and it was. And I pity the poor people who listen to it. They're going to have to check out or put on the cloak of glory.
Well, that's sort of the case anyway, so you're just trying to help everybody you can. It's whosoever will. And if they will, then who? Good. And if they don't, it matters not. It'll pass.
Okay. Very good. Thanks a lot, JW.
See
Talk
you
to you soon.
Then.
Okay. Bye.